Hello everyone, welcome to the Game Junk Podcast for April 2016. This is episode number 28, and my name is Sean.
My name is Frank.
And my name is Andrew.
Coming up on this month's episode, we've got lots of games to talk about. We're going to be talking The Witness, Quantum Break, Lego Dimensions, Far Cry Primal. What else have you been playing there, Frank?
Did you say The Division?
The Division. What do you got, Huck City?
The Witcher 3.
The Witcher 3. Lots of stuff we've been playing. We got some VR discussion coming up. Our most anticipated games of 2016 and some of your junk mail. Thanks for downloading and sticking with the most regular podcast on the internet.
Come on, 6 months. That's regular, right?
So, yeah, and I mean, Huck City, thanks for bearing with us, because I know it's been like 2 or 3 months now. You've been like, okay, I'm ready to record. Let's go. And it took a while, but here we are.
The joys of only having one podcast that runs every 6 months.
So, how you guys doing? How's the gaming been for you guys?
It's been okay. I powered through some of games trying to make a top list for 2015. Which seems kind of useless now that it's
Do you have a list? Do you want to reveal anything?
I got
for
a
us?
List. Yeah, I got a list. The list is a lot of big name
AAA
games. Some smaller games, maybe some hidden gems in there. Wouldn't pick.
We'll give it to us then.
Right now?
Might as
right
well. I don't know. Do you have a list or anything, Frank? I mean, I have like maybe one game I could mention, but
I'm trying to hammer something out quick right now. I was not prepared.
You don't have like a number one just off the top of your head?
I think it's Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. Huck City, what do you got?
All right. Well, my number 10, I was thinking Until Dawn. I don't know if you guys played this PS4 horror game.
I've wanted to check it out. I've heard it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was good. I really enjoyed it. I obviously did not beat it, as per most of the games on my list, but I put enough into it to realize it was in the top 10. Number 9, Destiny Taken King. After so many people talking about Destiny, I borrowed the Taken King from the old library, as with almost every game on my list here. And I was really enjoying it. I probably put in 5 or 6 hours. I don't think I got to any real content, but
so you started right at the Taken King expansion stuff, or
I have no idea what I started at. I got the Taken King disc, I put it in my machine, I installed it for like 3 hours, however long it takes to install.
Yeah,
then I started at the same place where I had the demo for on my PS4 when Destiny originally came out.
So you might have just been playing vanilla Destiny.
Maybe.
I feel like you have
to
level up to get to the Taken King stuff. Can you confirm this, Frank?
Well, you can. I think there's a one-time 20-level orb you can use or something like that to skip all that, but I think you'd know if you used it.
Okay. I didn't do any of that. I was just playing regular Destiny, so scratch that one off the list.
So regular Destiny, best of 2016.
That's right, yeah. Then I'm going to slip number 8. I'm going to slip in Arkham Knight.
Nice.
You know what? Instead of Destiny, since that's kind of a cheat, I'll jump up Dying Light into there, which was an honorable mention.
Okay.
That was just a really fun game. Number 7, I think The Order, 1886, which is still one of the best-looking games on the PS4.
I think you're the only person that has that on your top 10 list.
I don't know. I was talking with Frank, and Frank was mentioning it might be up there on his.
Well, I guess that's...
It would be on my list.
That's surprising.
Number 6, Battlefront, which enjoyed playing with you guys, some co-op battles. Mm-hmm. Although I jumped back in month or two ago now, who knows. And boy, did I get my ass just handed to me constantly. I couldn't even do anything. Real frustrating, but...
Yeah.
Number five, Her Story. I think, Sean, you had taken a look at this game.
Yeah.
That game is really good. Basically, the story is it's just FMV of an interview of a woman telling us her side of the story. And then you learn it's not just her, it's her and her twin. So then you're trying and you're seeing these FMVs in, let's say, 5 to 15 second, maybe longer, little movie snippets. And you have to use, okay, back up. You start off, you're at like a computer terminal, essentially, and you type in keywords, and these keywords will show you short little FMV clips of her interview. And you're playing as a police officer or some family member trying to figure out what happened to, I think it's their mom or something. And you have access to the computer terminal. Then you basically are playing the story of the woman sitting in front of the computer trying to figure out what happened by typing in keywords, pulling up these movies, watching the movies, and then finding more clues to use more keywords to find the story. And I knew going in that this is how you played this game. It wasn't real. There was no real ending. You can watch all the clips, but they never tell you what actually happens in the game.
And I was under the impression that there is an end game scenario. Like, if you watch the right videos that kind of reveal everything, then there's some final video that plays or something like that.
There's something where it's like, eventually you get a pop-up saying, are you done, essentially? Like, are you satisfied? It's kind of like a message from, like, the police chief saying to the woman, like, are you satisfied with all the videos you've seen? Like, have you come, basically, like,
you should have seen.
Have you personally come to a conclusion?
Right.
And then you can choose yes or no and go on from there. But it's no real, like, ending video kind of thing. But what is really impressive about this game is not, well, the actress's talent for portraying both characters is really good. But what really is good is this, it's amazing how they weave the story no matter what order you watch it in. And it still seems to come out. Like, I've listened to some spoiler podcasts after I played through the game, and it sounds like there's really like two thoughts of what actually happened. And it's amazing how no matter what order you sort of like witness the story unfold in, it still comes to the like one of those two conclusions. And I thought that from a storytelling perspective is really awesome. And also, what I really liked about it is it's sort of like that Total Recall moment at the end where you don't really know what is truth and what's fake or what reality is, essentially.
Right.
Like, are you in the Matrix or are you not? Sort of idea, right?
So there's a sci-fi twist in this then?
No. There's not. But it's more like, basically, is she crazy or is she not crazy is sort of the takeaway.
Okay.
And just how they lay out the story is really compelling. It's actually stuck with me. I played this game probably in October. And it's still like, it's kind of climbing my ranks as I look back on it. It's one of the few games that I actually still remember a lot about going forward. So everyone should pick that game up. I think it's $15 full price, and you can definitely get it on a Steam sale for less.
I think it's cheaper than that on iOS as
well. Oh, yeah, maybe. Might even be less than that on,
which I gotta say, I was playing it on iOS, and I kind of think maybe that hampered my enjoyment a little bit, because it's like, you know, you gotta type in the keywords, but you're trying to type on your little keyboard. Video is pretty small. I don't know. I mean, I wish there was some sort of progress marker other than just figuring out yourself if you've come to a conclusion or not.
Well, there is. I don't know if this is just on the Steam, but there is a way you can like open up essentially. I think it's supposed to represent a hard drive, and you can see which videos have been accessed in memory.
Oh, okay.
So you can see which ones you found and which ones you haven't, though they're randomly in there, so you don't actually know the order. But there is a trick for searching the searching out the videos you don't have. Essentially, there's a little room for you to add metadata to the videos you've watched already. So you can kind of like tag them that you've watched them.
Oh, okay.
And then you can search for, I think it's just like blank spaces. And then it'll show you all the videos with blank spaces. And then you just fill those in, fill in the metadata tags for those. And then it will, no, those won't appear anymore.
So that would definitely be something you can only do on PC though. Like not on.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the iOS version. But yeah. So that way you can definitely watch all the videos that way.
Okay.
But either way, go pick up this game. It's really quite good, and just stick with it. And it's interesting how you can, I think they started you off with 6 videos and you watch all 6, and I think they give you like 2 or 3 sort of threads of story that you can go down. And it seems like no matter which thread you kind of pull at first, you kind of all come back to the same conclusion, which is really neat. Or not the same conclusion, but the one of the 2 conclusions.
Right.
But yeah, it's really interesting. It's and actually I got more enjoyment after playing than listening to spoiler section, like spoiler podcasts about it, because it was like different perspective on the same game. And the game's not that long. It's only a few hours. Anyways, that's the Her Story, What I Just Played section of this.
All right.
let's see here. I lost my list. That was number 5. Number 4, Madden. Best game of the year. I'm playing the shit out of Madden. The RPG elements of the game are incredible. I'm doing a GM Connected with my brother. And since NHL took out their GM Connected, we've been playing this a ton. And, yeah, the gameplay is excellent. The RPG elements they added are great. Just, I can't say enough about this game. It should be number 1, actually, on my list. Let's be honest. I've played it the most of any game this year.
Every time I look at Huck Online, he's playing Madden.
Yes,
so
that is for sure.
I also feel it should be his number 1 game.
Yeah. Number 3, Rise of the Tomb Raider. I'm sure Frank can talk about this game. I haven't actually played it through to the end yet, but it's great. It just builds on the original Tomb Raider remake formula, and it's great. Number 2, Metal Gear Solid 5, Phantom Pain. That game just has so much depth and detail, and that's just amazing game. And then number 1, Citizens of Earth. Just kidding. The Witcher 3, number 1. This game is just so deep. The world is incredible. You walk around and stuff's going on all over the place. They have like Batman style investigations happening, and the combat's great. The magic is, and the crafting and stuff's all still a little overwhelming to me, but they do a great job of sort of leading you around the world so that you don't feel like you're just wasting your time wandering aimlessly. There's always sort of breadcrumbs along the way to take you to where you need to go. So if point A to point B is really far away, there's a whole bunch of little things in between to kind of keep you going. And yeah, it's definitely the top RPG I've played last year and this year so far.
Nice.
I'll just burn through mine. I won't say anything. Number 10, Bloodborne. Number 9, Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time. Number 8, Rare Replay. Number 7, Battlefront. Number 6, The Order 1886. I guess this one I didn't play in 2015, but it's from 2015 since we're doing this show so late. Rocket League would be number 5. Ori and the Blind Forest, number 4. Metal Gear Solid The Phantom Pain, number 3. Batman Arkham Knight, number 2. And Rise of the Tomb Raider, numero uno.
Yeah, I don't really have a top 10 list.
We have top 1 list, you already said.
Well, yeah, I have what I think would be my number 1, except that it technically is probably a 2014 game. It came out on PS4 2015, but it would be the Talos Principle. But I have some other things. For me, when I was even thinking about my list, like there was some stuff I wanted to play, and obviously there's some big games on your list that I didn't even touch. But I had a lot of stuff that I was like, yeah, that could go in like my number 6 to 10 section, but the top 5 was really hard. Stuff I would mention: Axiom Verge, probably Ori would be on there somewhere, Transformers Devastation, Arkham Knight might be in there, and Well, there's one thing I'll mention that will be my mind fuck of the month. I'll save it for later, but it probably would have been in there somewhere too. So that's all I got for you.
One thing I want to say on games that were released 2015, I want to give a shout out to Life is Strange. I haven't played it, but props to them for actually getting all 5 episodes out in 2015 calendar year. I think it came out in episode 1 came out in January or February, and they actually released all 5 episodes within 2015, which I found pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Unlike Kentucky Route Zero, which I think is still only released 2 of the 5. And I think that game's 4 years old now or so.
Yeah, it's tough for sure.
Frank, what can you talk about Rocket League a little bit?
Oh, yeah, Rocket League would be on my list, too. That
game
a lot of fun.
Is getting a lot of press from people. And I like it. It's a good game. But it's not on my list because I feel like it's a boiled-down sports game. And
what's wrong with that, though?
Nothing. It's surprising me that it's getting all these high praise from people that most likely don't play sports games. But
yeah,
you play sports games. Whereas I mean,
to me, that's like, I like sports games. I used to like sports game. What?
I just realized iDarb, I guess, was technically a 2015 release.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Like that to
Bloodborne,
me,
you're gone. iDarb. iDarb's in.
Deserves mention as well. To me, like I like sports games. I used to love sports games back in the 8-bit era because they were so simple. And the depth and the complexity of sports games in the current console generation has kind of turned me off a little bit. I mean, I just don't have that much. Like, I just want something that I can pick up and play, and you know, if a friend comes over, we can just immediately start going head to head at something. And I played, my brother was over like a couple months back, and we played both iDarb and Rocket League and just had a blast. It was like the good old days for us. So
well, I guess how I'd say it is, if we didn't have the last, I don't know, 20 years of Madden or so, and Madden came out this year, I think it would be in my top 5 or top 3. It's just, it's small refinements on, I would say this year's refinements are much more substantial than previous years, but with Rocket League, it's inventing a new sport almost, and the mechanics are simple and deceptively deep and fun, and I feel like there is a new, they've created a new skill set for a video game sport, and it's compelling, and I feel there's times when I screw up, and the same way when you play real sports and you mess up a pass or drop a catch, like you feel a gut punch moment, or it's on you, and I get that all the time playing Rocket League, and the satisfaction of knowing I did something right, or yelling at teammates saying, I'm setting you up, I'm centering the ball, get this shit done. Like it's got all the passion of real sports in a new fake virtual sport, and I think it's pretty awesome.
There's something about, like, because these games are so simple, like there's a one-to-one correlation. Every single thing you do on the controller is affecting something in the game, and I feel like that kind of gets lost in a lot of the sports games now because the animations are so detailed, and it's like you push one button and you do like this crazy spin move and all this stuff happens, but you know, like you're just literally driving a car into a ball, and you know, whatever angle you hit it at, that's the direction it goes, and it's very precise, and it is totally one of those games that's easy to pick up and play but takes like forever to master. So
what I would add to that, Sean, is in a game like Madden or NHL, while they're a lot of fun, I can't control the whole team at the same time. There's so many variables that are AI bound and other things that I just can't control, where, like you said, everything in this game is in control by someone, and someone's to blame. It's never the game's fault. It's the player's fault in most cases. So I like, the only thing I would say, small gripe, I don't know if this is like that on every version, but on the Xbox version, the
DeLorean, the Batmobile DLC,
Well, it's kind of related to that. I actually bought it, so I can't complain that much. I know I'm a fucking mouth breather too sometimes, you know? And then there's an advertising window on the main menu for DLC, and the matchmaking window, when you start a game, shows up on top of that. And there's all this real estate that's not even being used on the left side of the screen. And I get this layered mess on the right side of the screen. Get your shit together. Spread that stuff out. This is fucking amateur hour.
I think the reason I bring it up is because it seems like a game that is rooted in sports. It's simplistic on the surface, like you guys are saying. But I think there's also a lot of depth in that game. Like, I've heard of people doing crazy spin kicks and jump flips in the air and all this, like, crazy skill-based stuff, not even talking about the strategy that people are using to win, and how I've been reading how strategies are, like, changing online. And, you know, there's all these, you know, you play one way and then you come up against a team, you got to change your strategy. And I'm just thinking, this is just like any other sport strategy. But what I find interesting is that there's all these people playing this game that either hate sports or would never touch a sports game because it's a sport. And I find it funny that Rocket League has kind of broken through all the like anti-sport game people.
Uh-huh.
And it's very similar. The game's like, Rocket League is a sports game.
Absolutely it is.
All it's missing is its real life roots in a
but
sport.
I mean, like, do you consider fighting games to be sports games? Like,
what, like kind of like Street Fighter or like UFC?
Well, yeah,
Street Fighter. I guess so. Sure.
I
wouldn't necessarily.
I mean, anything that's competitive like that, like even like, you know, Call of Duty or stuff like that, could be seen as a sports game on some level. But, yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. Like, there's definitely people that just don't like sports. They don't follow sports teams. As a result, they have no interest in that realm of gaming.
Yeah.
But you give them something. And I think this comes back to, like, what I was saying. Like, in the 8-bit era, they didn't have the licenses for teams and players, so they would come up with creative, crazy shit, like Baseball Simulator or Baseball Stars or whatever else. And that could appeal to a broader audience in some ways, but
anyways, just some thoughts.
So I guess before we get to, we have some news to talk about. Obviously there's been a bunch of stuff happening. I got a personal announcement to throw out here.
This is what I want to get to.
So well, I bring it up because, you know, we used to refer to this show as a podcast about video games by the people who make them.
Uh-oh.
But I'm not going to be a person making them anymore, so I don't know if I can do this podcast anymore. Yeah, I'm leaving the game industry. I got to start a new job in about a week. By the time you hear this, I may have worked my final day in the game industry. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I kind of predicted this a while back, and kind of, you know, for life reasons, this just seemed like a better option for me. But I will say I'm still hoping that I can could do some stuff on the side. I've found in the past that, I mean, geez, it's been 12 or 13 years since I've been outside of the game industry. But I do remember working those other jobs, and you know, there was something about them that fired your creative. You got the creative juices flowing because you were just, you know,
so
doing
bored.
The 9-to-5 thing all day, and so it could happen. I don't know. I already have a couple ideas that are floating around in my head, but you know, I don't want to be some chump who says, "Yeah, I'm going to do this," and then I never end up doing it. So we'll see. But yeah. It was a tough decision, man. I'm a little bit unsure. Just, you know, like I said, it's been a long time. Like, I gotta wear like khakis now. Like I can't wear jeans.
That's why I'm looking on the outside. You're already a khaki guy. You just haven't admitted it yet. Embrace those fucking khakis. And they're comfortable.
There came a point. Like I know you kind of still work with, you know, old friends, Frank and Huck City. You're kind of doing the indie thing, but like there did come a point where I was working, where a lot of the younger people, they would just be speaking a whole other language. They'd have all these inside jokes about video game culture that I am no longer aware of, and I just like, I'm getting too
dolphin
old for this
memes
shit.
And nonsense.
Yeah,
so, real.
I guess that's when you know your time is up. You're just the old man in the building, and
if you're not playing League of Legends from 6 p.m. to 2 a.m., you're just out of the loop.
Yeah, pretty much. So anyway, I don't know. I hope I can continue to do this podcast. I hope I continue to be interested in video games. And
you're always welcome on this podcast, Sean.
Well, thanks.
Just
for
be
that.
Nowhere well, without I, you.
I think if anything, it's going to give you more time to enjoy video games.
I hope so.
You'll be able to make a top two list next time.
That's definitely the plan. Okay, so let's get into some news. I think probably the big thing we need to talk about, the console wars are heating up yet again with rumors of a PS 4.5 and or PS4K, or the two nicknames I've heard for this supposed new Sony console that's said to be in the works. Now, has there been talk of another Microsoft one as well, or no?
Oh, there's a few rumors of flutter there, Sean. Not quite as substantial as the PlayStation ones, but they're out there.
So I guess the thoughts are that, and I mean, this happens with a lot of consoles. I mean, certainly PS3, you know, partway through the life cycle, they released the PS3 Slim. You know, there's multiple consoles.
Not quite the same, but
well, yeah, I guess that's true. But
okay, well, there's a start to this. Now you're looking back at this, you go to the 32X and stuff like that, right? And at least the games for that were branded differently. It was almost a mini system that attached to another one. It built on something, but there wasn't as much confusion as to what would work. And I guess the RAM expansion pack for Nintendo 64 is another one that only you needed, and only certain games, or you needed for certain games, and it was a little iffy. I'm sure there was mistakes. There was no internet back then, but I'm sure people bought games and couldn't play them as a result of this thing. But this is kind of going into a new area, and before the 4K thing, the new Nintendo 3DS came out, and I do not understand how this is not a bigger deal.
What do you mean?
Well, there have been first of all, they've essentially said it's the same system, but faster load times, better processing.
But I mean, they've also come out with the 2DS and the bigger 3DS, whatever that was called.
Yes, but the difference is, now they're releasing games. I don't know if you saw this on IGN.
Can only run on it.
Well, it's almost unplayable on an old version of the system. They have two separate reviews. They have a review for the game on the original 3DS and on this 3DS, and it's like borderline unplayable on the original. Not to mention, the Super Nintendo virtual console titles that will only work on the new 3DS version of this. Now this is treading
Super
into
Nintendo.
Yeah, and they won't even work on the old one.
Oh boy!
So,
what?
See, nobody knows about this. Like, this is a fucking disaster. I do not understand why this is not a bigger deal. And it's
like, well, I guess, I mean, they just haven't been releasing that many games now. Like, what are some games that don't run on the old one?
Hyrule
Warriors.
No, they did the Xeno Chronicles remake of the Wii for 3DS, and it only runs on the new 3DS, I believe. Pretty sure.
I didn't know that one, but...
Which one did you say, Frank?
Hyrule Warriors.
Oh, okay.
The 3DS version of that. So, that to me, that's fundamentally wrong. Like, you're saying it's not a new system, but it is, essentially, and you're kind
of... This is like the days of the N64 with that extra expansion thing.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, but at least that, it's not buying a new system to play it.
Yeah.
There's a big difference. And
have you bought the Hyrule Warriors?
No, not.
Have you seen the packaging? Do they have any separate branding?
I have not. I don't know. I'm basing all on what I read on websites. And if there's any Nintendo fanboys, they can tear me apart right now. Have at it. It's all right. But I would just say, if the PlayStation 4K goes in this direction, that games almost don't run on old ones, or there's a huge gap in what games you can play and how they play between the two versions, this is a disaster. This is a huge problem. And I would assume developers who develop for this thing are working under the assumption that the game has to run on the base specs or the base dev kit, and maybe it seems like a lot of this 4K stuff is being pushed by VR technology. So
you think the new Sony system is just to help support the PlayStation VR when that comes out?
And, sir, this is the main reason, I hope anyway, is to be a 4K Blu-ray player, because I know Sony in the past has had huge market advantages based on the fact that Blu-ray was a new technology and PS3 was a great Blu-ray player, period, and one of the cheapest ones when they came out, and the same for the PS2 as a DVD player. So I think that's part of their incentive here.
That makes like the most sense. That seems pretty obvious, and to me that's totally reasonable, like a perfect reason to release a new version of the console. The other stuff seems more questionable and worrisome to me, if that's the case.
I agree. I just hope that's not the case. And the other thing is 4K streaming being a thing as well now too. And these things have current generation consoles, even going back to the last generation, have been morphing into entertainment hubs at home. And I'm assuming 4K streaming will be a part of that in the next few years. So it's a chance for them to get a jump on that and get that market share and make themselves the console or entertainment hub for people as we're transitioning into 4K.
That could be a problem. So if Sony releases this system with more processing power, to get around the issue we're talking about, they could obviously just say, all right, you're only this new power or whatever, processing power, graphical power, is only available for VR. But I can't envision them putting all this R&D money into a console where they limit 90% of the games to only using like the bottom, let's say 75% of the power that's available. They're going to let everyone use it.
I wouldn't say that. Yeah.
Well, they're going to want Uncharted 5 to be as good as it can.
Right.
The game has to pass certification on the specs of the original PS4.
Yeah. I think that's what will happen, but I guess as far as I'm thinking about this, it seems so early, you know, in the console life to already be talking about this. Like if it is about adding more memory and processing power, but it does make the VR thing does make sense, because when you think about it, Oculus, you know, they require like super high end PCs to be able to play stuff for the Oculus, and somehow PlayStation is saying, well, we've got our VR thing and you can just use your PS4, which is already, you know, underpowered compared to just probably an average PC that's coming out this year. So, you know, like that doesn't seem to add up to me.
Now, I wonder if maybe it is just going to be some sort of add-on something. Like, I don't know how they would do it through USB or something, but maybe they just do an add-on pack.
I mean, that's what...
instead of like
Microsoft
a brand new standalone.
With the HD DVD
yeah,
player.
Something like that. Because from a certification aspect, for me, it's almost like... like usually you have your lead SKU, right? Either PS4 or the Xbox One or 360 and PS3. And you'd always develop for, you know, like the lower end one to make sure you could make it on there. And then the upper one should in theory just work, upper end machine. So it's almost like Sony is now, if they go this route where they have two separate machines that you have to cert for, it's almost like they're doing that to themselves, where they would essentially be limiting the games to be on the lower end one just through them needing to be on it.
Yeah.
But internally, it's not like you're doing it between Microsoft and Sony, because that's how like the PS4 got a jump, and that's how Xbox 360 got a jump on the PS3, because those were considered like the higher end, easier to develop for platforms. So you were kind of using those as your lead SKUs because they're easier to develop for. But
yeah, I mean, it's the same as,
it seems weird to be doing it at an internal level where you're kind of fighting with your own system, like fighting the developers.
You remember when the 360 came out, there was, you know, you could get like a really cheap version of it that had very little, like it didn't even have
no hard drive,
didn't even have a hard drive. And like that caused huge problems for developers that were trying to, you know, make their games run on this thing.
So many certification requirements that would never happen in reality had to deal with.
So here's an interesting question, though. Will Nintendo be the first company to put out a console with a 4K Blu-ray player in it?
No.
The Nintendo NX, will it be 4K compatible?
Well, I think in the original, or one of the leaked specs, original leaked specs, there was something about a 4K resolution. I think it was more for, I'm foggy on this, but it represented more a higher resolution display typical of a phone. So what a Retina display would be essentially on an iPhone, which is not the same as 4K, but in the context of a phone is a much better resolution. So I think it related more to, we've seen the mock-ups of the NX controller where it's a touch screen device essentially with analog sticks on it in the patents and all that stuff. So I think it might represent the resolution of that display. I hope they do. I mean, Nintendo needs to set the world on fire, especially in the eyes of the hardcore gamers, and they've got a long way to go right now. So they are needing to make a big splash with this announcement. So I would love it if it was. It would save me from buying a high-def Blu-ray player, potentially, or allow me to get one in multiple rooms. But I don't think it is. I really don't. I think it will be comparable or slightly better than Xbox and PS4. And
I don't even know if it's going to be better than those, to be honest with you.
I think it will be, or similar, just to the effect that they're banking on trying to get third-party support back, where if it's close to there and they make it easy to develop for, they'll get more third-party support, because that has... I wouldn't say it's a problem, because people buy Nintendo systems for Nintendo games, but it doesn't help that third-party games do not come to it. So I'm really excited. I don't know if that's the right word, or heavily anticipating Nintendo's announcement. I want to get it soon. I'm very curious as to what they're going to do. They have been out of the game for me personally for about 2 years, so...
Their release schedule has been slowing down considerably, which does bring us to another news story, which is that there's been rumors that they might be ending Wii U production this year. Which they've denied.
I would almost be certain that they
I'm
have.
I'm surprised they haven't ended it already. I'm sure they have factories full of them.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make... As soon as this new thing is out, it doesn't make any sense. You know, there's not even close to the install base that the original Wii had. Like, there's nobody that they need to keep, you know, pushing this.
Just because they're shutting down production, there's still unpurchased ones all over the place on store shelves or in warehouses, so...
Yeah, no, I didn't read the full thing on this. Does that also mean they're completely shutting down new games for the Wii U? I mean,
oh yeah, for sure,
that's happening anyway. But
well, I have a feeling that like the new Star Fox, because I think Star Fox's release date has been announced, right?
Yeah,
it's soon.
Yeah.
But the new Zelda,
that's
going to be a cross, I guarantee.
I don't even know if it's going to be on Wii U, to be honest with you.
I'm right where you guys are. I don't think... I mean, if it isn't, people are going to lose their minds.
Really? You think so?
I think people will be very mad.
If they give a new... I mean, I guess they did it with the Wii, right? But, I mean, if they launch a new console and there's a new Zelda game to play, you don't think people will be excited about that?
There is, but they have been adamant that this game is coming to Wii U in several instances. So, we'll see what happens. I doubt it. I personally doubt it as well. But I would say the other aspect to that is there was another rumor recently that four of the launch titles for Nintendo NX are going to be recently released Wii U games. I guess new versions. You wouldn't say high def because the old ones were high def, but maybe added features that take advantage of the new system. And I think the rumored lineup was Splatoon, Zelda for sure, and I can't remember the other two off the top of my head. But
Bayonetta 2?
No, I don't think so.
Man, because nobody played that game, and it seems like that's. You know, that was supposed to be their game to get all the hardcore gamers to buy a Wii U, and it just didn't happen.
It's every time Nintendo has a new system, this is the time they're gonna bring all their guns. They're gonna have, you know, Nintendo streaming service, play all old Nintendo games, and they're gonna give everybody what they want from a Nintendo system. Like they have to pull this card out. Although the company still does very well in Japan, so I'm not sure if they're that worried. Like, that's their primary user base, I guess. But I'm really worried. They always disappoint me, or have for the at least last 15 years. So I still love their games. I will always play Nintendo games. I just, my passion level for them and how fast I play them and how much I wait on their stuff with bated breath is just, it's going away very, it's almost accelerating now how little I care about Nintendo.
I bet go ahead, Frank.
No, I'm just staring at all these amiibos and realizing I'm a complete hypocrite. Everything.
I think probably those last two games would have to be Star Fox and probably Mario Maker, right?
Is
that seems to be a big hit.
Well, were you talking about like their final big releases for the?
Yeah, and
the
like
Wii?
The games that would transfer over to NX to like in theory transfer over to the NX to make it appealing.
Yeah.
Maybe not even
yeah.
Star Fox. Like, I mean, how many people are going to play Star Fox? I don't know.
Yeah, it looks like it was also Mario Kart 8, Super Smash Brothers potentially, and Mario Maker. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're big sellers. For the people who didn't buy the Wii U,
Smash Brothers makes sense.
Get them on board,
which makes perfect sense because there's a ton of people who didn't buy the Wii U, and PS4 is employing some of the same strategy, not to the same extent. I always rag on them for releasing HD versions of stuff. That's pretty much their catalog at this point, and I'm half joking, but there were a lot of people who converted from Xbox users to PlayStation users in this console life cycle, and clearly people will want those games, and people who just love those games anyways, there's a market for those HD games for people who never got a chance to play them, and they're amazing.
You're talking
games.
About the collections, right? Like,
yeah, or just Last of Us Remastered and God of War 3. Like, those are amazing games, and it's a small subset of that market who's never played them before, and another subset that wants to play them again or will buy everything, like me.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just, it's a reality in terms of how long it's taking to get out next-gen games, and, like, these remakes are just an easy way to fill up your release slate, I guess. So we have a few other quick news stories to discuss with regards to Microsoft. They have some interesting things they've done with the newest Xbox One updates. So they have they're supporting cross-platform play now. I don't know which games this applies to at this point. Does anybody know?
Wasn't Rocket League the one?
Yeah, that, Rocket League.
That's the first one.
Yeah, I don't know the details. They just said it will be possible from their end. Rocket League would have to handle, or I can't remember the developer of Rocket League right now, but they would have to handle a lot of the details of how that would work, an internal matchmaking thing or friends list. I don't know. But yeah, I don't see why this is such a big deal, really. Maybe I'm missing something, but it just,
I feel like it would be big for the EA sports games, you know, like I've got friends who have only a PS4 or only an Xbox One. And, you know, if you don't have the game for that same system, then you can't play with them. And
yeah,
but I don't know, like, that again, it would be up to EA to support that. I don't know if it seems like something they would want to do, but they run their own servers and stuff. I don't know if that has anything to do with it as well.
Yeah, I think everything has to go through EA as well as through like Microsoft or Sony, so you'd think they would be able to handle it probably the best of anyone, because they already have that extra layer in there,
right? Yeah, so that's true. So then they also announced that, is it as of now, like the dev kit thing, has that already been rolled out?
I don't know.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, I thought it was, but I'm not 100% sure. But so the idea is that the Xbox One itself is a dev kit. So if you're a wannabe indie developer, or, you know, an established indie developer, you know, like, this has been one of the barriers to making your own game essentially on the console, is that getting a dev kit, they're very expensive. You have to apply for one, and yep, you have to be essentially legit. And I know Sony has been a little bit more flexible on that to try and attract indie talent, but this is kind of a cool thing. Now, if you own an Xbox One console, it can be used as a dev kit with some restrictions.
Yeah, I think what I read was that of the, I think it's 8 gigs of memory, you only get access to one. So it's pretty restrictive as far as anything of substance you want to make. I mean, if you want to make small things, you probably can. But I think I read it's more for sort of like the apps, the app developers. So like Netflix apps and,
right, yeah,
whatever else apps. NHL Network apps, MLB TV, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty smart, actually. I mean,
then they don't have to like pay for the big kits, and they could just do it.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, that's something I feel like I might play around with at some point. I mean, it's just a nice thing. I mean, obviously, with Unity and stuff, it's pretty easy to, you know, well, maybe not as easy as you might think in some cases, according to Huck City, but you know, to build for multiple platforms, and I don't know, there would be something cool about just being able to have a game you're trying to build, and then just throw it onto your console and just sit there and play it and test it out.
Yeah, it's nice to not have two big chunks of hardware sitting there too that you have to store. Just one.
Yeah, for sure. Do we want to talk about this Fable Legends thing at all? I wasn't really following the development of this game. I know you were kind of excited about it, right, Frank?
Well, I'm a huge fan of the Fable series in general. I downloaded the beta. I can't remember if it was open beta or closed beta, But I tried it out. It looked very good, but the gameplay was a little lackluster or confusing, at least in that. It's more of a multiplayer, not MMO, but yeah, kind of like a Destiny or raid structure based game with I don't know if there was a loot, but it was odd. I don't think it was working. I'm not super surprised that it got canceled. It just, they had been mentioning this game forever and ever, and it seemed like such a strange time to cancel it, or that they didn't redirect it earlier. I just, I hope it's not the end of Fable. I loved Fable 2 and Fable 3 a bit less, but just kind of sad that that's where that studio's at. And one of my, I'd say it was one of my most, what I perceive to be the most underrated franchise out there. And I don't know, I just, it kind of sucks. That was one of the Microsoft exclusives I thought would.
Yeah, I mean, that's something you would expect in a next-gen game to, you know, for Microsoft to be making that. And, yeah, I don't know. I mean, so they did shut down Lionhead Studios, right?
Yeah, as far as I know.
I'm pretty sure they did. So, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if somebody else will develop a new Fable game, but I have heard nothing about that. So that's a little weird. It's just weird that a game that big gets that far and then they shut it down.
I imagine they had something else going on too. I think that studio is pretty large. So you got to think it was probably something else got shut down also at the same time. So yeah, that's too true. Bad.
Yeah. It's always bad news when studios get shut down, but seems to happen quite a bit these days. So I guess this maybe brings us to our hot button topic for this particular episode. VR, the VR revolution.
It's here.
Is it a hit or a miss? And I mean, obviously we can't really, I haven't even played any of these systems. I know you've played with the PlayStation 1 a bit.
Yeah, that was a while ago, like a year and a half ago though.
And Frank, have you played around with any of these?
I have not popped my cherry yet on the VR. I was watching videos at work. Someone at work was telling me about the HTC Vive,
right?
Which I knew very little about, and it looked pretty intriguing. So I really want to give one of these a test run, or at least try it. I think it's from what you hear, seeing or playing is believing. So
right.
I just want to see if it's there, or I could see it being so easy where some weird little thing like how it feels on your face or like light peering in from the goggles, like can just ruin the experience. There's so many variables going on that I want to try it and find out. So, but I'm definitely intrigued, and everyone who tries it seems to love it way more to the extent of Kinect or Move or any of those like middle technologies leading up to this. So I've been thinking about maybe getting some kind of kit, or maybe I'll just wait for the PlayStation 1, but I'm definitely excited.
I mean, I've been super psyched for the VR revolution ever since they first started talking about it, but then they announced the prices for these things.
They're a little steep, especially the Oculus and HTC Vive have kind of hidden costs in there that are quite high.
Well, so is the PlayStation 1, right?
Well, not nearly as much.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I thought the PlayStation 1 was at least going to be sort of the affordable, you know, the one for the average person. And so they announced PlayStation VR $399 is the U.S. price. But then what they didn't say with the initial announcement is that you also need a camera. So there's a bundle that comes with a camera and a game or some demo stuff for $499 US. I believe it's actually $699 in Canada.
I think it comes with the Move controllers as well, right?
Yeah, it does.
I think so.
Yeah.
But that's more than I paid for the PS4 to begin with. Like, that's nuts. don't...
Time to man up, Johnny Mnemonic. You want this shit bad?
I do, but I don't think I can pay that much for this stuff. And the Oculus I was interested in, but like I have a crap PC. I'm not ready to upgrade to some cutting edge new PC at this point. So
that's the thing. That's the and the HTC Vive, which I think is the most expensive one, right? That one's $800.
Yeah.
That one is actually the most interesting to me because it has like room sensors. You actually can do like a room immersion.
Yeah.
Whereas from I think it's coming for Oculus, but it's not packed in. Whereas the HTC Vive, you can actually mount things on the wall, I believe, and then it recognizes the space you have to work in, and then it can adjust the VR. So you can actually move within 3D space, whereas most of the other ones are just head tracking.
Right.
They're not really your body motion going along for the ride, right? So I can see that being incredibly immersive. But $800 US plus a top of the line PC is like at least $2,000-$3,000.
And what's the game support for that? Like if it's something works for the Oculus, would it also play on that or does it have to be tailored to that?
I think as long as you integrate the SDK into your program, it should be basically the same. I mean, obviously there'll be hurdles. I think it's kind of like just another platform, but
right.
I imagine most of the VR specific stuff you do would port over pretty easily, but you'd still have to go through the right like SDK calls.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. There's just all the videos I saw had like weird storefronts for both, and it seems like the games are limited to the VR things right now. Like I know the Oculus stuff, some Steam games support the motion control, I think, and they just output to the display for the Oculus, which is a little different. But I think there are some exclusive titles that take it. I could see how the Vive would have exclusive titles that Oculus can't take advantage of. So,
well, I guess one thing we didn't partner say is the Vive is partnered with Steam or with Valve.
Right.
So they can, I think, oh, maybe we were talking about it last show, the Half-Life 3 for the Vive, obvious, but.
Yeah. Always being rumored, but.
Yeah. And then the Vive we didn't mention also comes with controllers, like hand controllers to similar to Move wands that you can, you know, do bow and arrow motions and stuff like that and pick things up, rotate objects. So
yeah, the other thing I read about Vive is that it also has a front facing camera. So although you're wearing your headset,
yes,
there is a way to see out. Although
yeah, it's awesome. It has like a grid kind of projection thing, so you could still pick up a drink off a table if you turn that mode on or do stuff like that. It's pretty amazing.
So I guess you know, well, so the Oculus Rift is out now, right? But it's
sort of
it's more for people who pre-ordered or
apparently even people who pre-ordered it are not getting it for months.
Yeah, like they're on back order and stuff, so a lot of people are not very happy. And I've also heard some complaints about just things that are missing with the basic like UI and stuff like that. Like I know one thing I keep hearing about is that all your games have to be installed to your C drive. They can't be, you can't choose what drive you install.
Oh,
them
no.
To. Like just weird things like that.
I can't believe Carmack let that get through. That seems.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I'm at the Vive shopping cart for Canada.
Oh boy, it's
$1,149.
Oh my goodness.
Canada. I'm pulling the trigger.
Do
I'll,
it.
I'll be over tomorrow.
I returned my my Samsung 4K player. I'm upgrading to Vive.
Do you have a PC that can run it?
No, we're going to buy that.
I know I bought a new computer 2 years ago. And my graphics card is not good enough, I don't think. I think I have a GTX 965 and you need a 970 or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, mine's pretty close to the minimum spec. I don't know if I would be able to pull it off with it.
Well, I mean, the thing is, you don't want it to be choppy either, because then going to be like
sick.
Yeah. So
don't want to be.
Yeah. Well, I've always often been an early adopter, so I think VR is. There's something about the PlayStation set, because I already have the PlayStation Eye toy or whatever it is now, and the Move stuff that is collecting dust. I don't even know where it is right now. It's fucking shit. And then
is it actually the Eye toy that they're using, or is it a new camera?
No, it's the PlayStation, whatever one they sell right now, Eye, I think it's called. Or maybe it is just PlayStation camera. And so I think I could justify getting that in at an entry level if there, you know, is one or at least one really great game that takes advantage of it, or people say there are games that make it worth it. I would give it a shot. So I know that's the other place where it's huge is development and people applying for funding and like GDC stuff. It's like VR is the hot button topic in the industry right now, and people making sure their games will work with that. I'm guessing
not even just in the game industry, but movies and stuff too, right? Like film festivals are.
I think everywhere. VR programs. I think VR is the future in every other industry, more so than in games. Yeah. Like imagine, you know, house hunting.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Doing architecture designs, like architecture firms, medical industry, doing, you know, like, I don't know, some sort of inner body thing through VR, kind of walking through the body that way.
Operating on someone through VR.
Sort of, yeah. Like, you know, we're going to be, before we know it, we're going to be plugged into the Star Trek holodeck, just loving life. And just
as long as I can never get out of my bed.
Yeah, that'll happen. Don't worry
about
it.
If I can live through an avatar, that's what I want.
Yeah, but so, we're in the Matrix. It's happening. This is it. But this is Skynet.
But I guess the question is, when will that happen? Like, do you guys see these things being adopted quickly? Like, I mean, I guess on the very base level, there's the Google Cardboard, which we talked about a little bit.
Yeah, and the Gear VR, like Samsung Nexus 7.
Right.
Those commercials are everywhere right now. They are pushing that. Real hard.
Yeah, I'm actually more tempted to go for that than
me too.
Some of these other ones.
I was looking around because the marketing is so strong. I was looking at how much it costs just to get a standalone phone without the contract.
Oh, and well, there's your problem. You got to get the contract.
Apparently, a standalone S6, which is the level below, and I don't even know if it supports Gear VR, is $1,000.
Yeah,
just for the phone.
Yep.
I'm like, holy shit. Like,
let me go back to that HTC Vive checkout. Maybe this is the way to go. But
yeah, but the Gear VR is really good. I mean, as far as I'm pretty sure
I'm
the quality.
Take the opposite approach. I think the HoloLens and Google Glasses are closer to where the future is. I do think the VR thing, it might be a fad. I'm not convinced. I don't know if people are ready to put something on their head. I mean, I feel uncomfortable with headphones on sometimes in my own house. So I don't know if people are ready for that kind of broken off experience from the world. I think there's like small places for it, and it's neat. No one would deny this stuff is cool or neat. That's not the point. It's how willing are you to change your way of life and how you consume things to the point where there's a helmet on your head all the time. And I just don't think people will do it. Maybe an AR solution like Google Glasses or HoloLens, and maybe they'll get closer to that with technologies like the front facing camera on the HTC Vive, and they'll find a middle ground. But I still think it's got a ways to go before it passes gimmick level.
I actually think that games is the least applicable for VR. I think, if anything, games will be the first kind of industry that adopts VR that'll probably go away. I think other industries will pick it up much, much faster. like I was saying.
Let's face
like
it, it's for porn. It's for porn.
Well, yeah, porn is
like that. That's where we're going here. Let's not beat around the bush. We're adults here. You know, no one minds strapping one of these helmets on for 10 minutes. Get your rocks off and get back about your business.
Perfect for 10-minute sessions.
Exactly. What a coincidence. We are, it. You know, you get involved for 10 minutes and you had your fill. What does that work for? I don't know. But all signs are pointing to porn.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing is, like, you know, again, it's, who's going to actually, like, are people going to have these things at their homes? Like, if you say real estate will adopt this technology, that makes a lot of sense to me. But then does that mean you have to actually go to, like, a realtor's office and they'll have a thing set up? Where
well,
you
not
around?
In theory, not with, like, Google Cardboard or the Vive, because everyone's going to have an Android phone or a iPhone.
Do you think Apple's going to... I mean, there's been rumors that they're working on something.
I think what the one you just said, that's another great 10-minute example of using it, right? I think it's going to lend itself more to, I was like joking about the porn thing, even though I think it will make its way there. That real estate example is a great one. Like not having to leave your house to do a walkthrough, or it's just what's the cost and the setup of like how would an average homeowner be able to afford,
right?
Or is the like real estate
who's buying
who's taking
the
cost of that?
Because yeah. It's just too expensive.
So I mean,
it'll come down eventually. But
yeah, I mean, how long is that going to be though? Like, I still think that's 20 years before that's commonplace.
I don't know about 20 years, but 5 or 10 maybe. I mean, especially because they're still working out, you know, the finer points of the technology and stuff. So.
Is there a real-time camera system anywhere that where you're controlling the camera with your head movements in another place? I'm sure that there is, but...
You mean like being able to look around
probably not
in
an
real
all
time?
Probably not an all-in-one
yeah,
solution.
Yeah, not a pre-recorded video with different angles, but...
Yeah, the HTC... No, not HTC. GoPros can do it, but you need to pay big bucks for the broadcast system.
Yeah, that's a lot of... data to be
yeah
no for sure. That's another thing too, but obviously I'm excited. It's cool. So just don't know.
I'm sure it's close happen. Right, because you have like 360 cameras, and now you have doesn't Periscope essentially do that just with 2D, like a 2D image with your camera? Doesn't it do live stream through your phone? Isn't that what Periscope does? So
yeah,
in theory the next step is to do 360 Periscope type videos.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm sure
there was a rumor on Howard Stern that's what their next big thing is going to be, like Howard 360, where that's a good setting for that, because it's a single set environment. It's one room that they're all in. So it'd be easy to place a camera in the middle and, you know, follow along with what's happening. I mean, that's a perfect example. Another one might be, you know, rather than movies, like recording stage stuff or live, you know, play presentations or operas, stuff like that. There's lots of cool applications. I think the barrier is more the technology to get the information and then feed it back to the VR. Like that's where the expenses start to come into play. How do you get a camera in the spot that can record all these ways and get it there fast enough? And how much space does all this information take? Like, there's still a lot of things that have to happen.
Well, I'm not going to say anything specific, but let's just say that the process of getting it off of the camera and the raw footage to a 360 video is still the slowest part of this process. And that's where all the speed improvements need to happen right now. And that is a slow process, and that is time consuming. And once that can be sped up, content creation will go a lot faster for sure. And it'll be a lot more accessible to everyone. Cause like you're saying, there's no way to like live stream. Cause how it works right now, a lot of cameras, like, I don't know if you've seen any of the GoPro setups where they have like 12 cameras in a ring and then they make a 360 video. Some of those you actually have to take the SD cards out of all the individual cameras, put them into a file, put them into a special software, and then drag each individual movie into the proper spot, and then it stitches it together into a 360 video. It's really good once it's done, but there are like, you can get seam lines and all this stuff, and it's just very time consuming to do that sort of thing. And there are different systems to do it other ways, but the video quality is lower. So it's interesting, but there's definitely going to be, if people are investing, and I think people are investing in this technology, that the hardware and software both need to see big improvements kind of side by side in order to get really good quality stuff. It's kind of like, you know, original cell phones. You didn't have your smartphone. Kind of, I think we're kind of at the dumb phone section of VR right now.
Yeah, it's going to come a long way still, I think. But okay, well, anything else you guys have to say about the VR revolution, or should we move on?
I guess the biggest thing would be I'm just not that educated on it yet, and I will say everything I hear, I really want to try it really, really soon.
That is one problem, though, right, is that you can watch videos online, but it doesn't give you the actual experience. So it's really, like, in terms of selling people on it, I feel like that's a problem. And in terms of people wanting to learn more about it, that's a problem. So
it's like the 3DS problem.
Yeah.
Except, well, I thought AR was really cool on the 3DS. I was like, oh, this is it. Games are going to use this AR technology. And I tried it the first day I got the game, and I literally have not used it ever again in my life. So
yeah.
There's a threshold where everything works and is not, you know, the Vive setup where I have to, like, literally attach things to my walls and do something crazy to get this done. And I think that's just a ways away. As a basic version of it with a display right in front of your eyes that's mounted to your head and has basic directional control, I think that could be cool and is a mild enhancement for video games that could work.
Okay, well, let's do our top five most anticipated games of 2016. Now, granted, we're 4 months in, well, 3.5, I guess, months into 2016. So I didn't personally include anything that's come out the previous 3 months.
Fair enough.
I'm assuming you guys did the same, but... it was hard because I feel like a lot of these games probably were on previous lists we had or best of E3 lists we've had, stuff like that. But I tried to mix it up a little bit. So, let's just rattle these off. Huck City, what do you got?
I'm going to start with Final Fantasy 15. I was more excited before I played the demo that came out.
I'll get to that in what we played.
So I'll just leave it at that. But I'm still hopeful. Mass Effect Andromeda. Hopefully that comes out this year. Yeah.
It is not.
Well, nope. I think it's like a first quarter 2017, which could be end of 2016 because that's their fiscal.
Yeah, and since we're 3 months in, 4 months in, let's just go from.
yeah, fair enough.
I'm going to say June or September 2017 for that game.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's still on my list. I'll pretend. I'll plead ignorance. Horizon Zero Dawn. That game looks amazing. Star Citizen will not be yeah.
a 2016.
I don't know. Sony might need a game. Star Citizen, which I guarantee will not come out this year. Which also is saying will come out this year. And Uncharted, which comes out in a month.
Yeah. All right. I got number five, Thimbleweed Park. This is the new...
Oh, yeah. Ron Gilbert.
Ron Gilbert game. And I'm hoping this is going to be what the what Broken Age kind of seemed like it was originally going to be. Not that I hated Broken Age, but this is like straight up just like...
Going
back to the like the LucasArts heyday, and the story sounds kind of cool too. So I'm excited for that. Number four, Mirror's Edge Catalyst. I don't know what
it
is.
You're not going to play that game.
You don't think so?
No, you're not going to
play it. I'm pretty excited for it. Like,
really?
I played a
tiny bit. It's VR, baby. It's going to be the best VR game.
Well, that's one thing. But I played a bit of the original, but, you know, for whatever reason, never totally got into it. But just the videos I've seen of this, I don't know. I'm excited about it, and feel like I kind of maybe missed out on the first one, and I'm going to go all in on this one.
Well, you got time on your hands now. You're out of the game industry.
You heard it here first. Sean is going all in on
Mirror's Edge.
Mirror's Edge.
Number. <He's> gone. I'll play 5 hours instead of 4 hours. Number three, Severed, which is the new game coming from Drinkbox, and has a release date now, which
next
is
week or 2 weeks from now.
Very soon,
26th.
So I'm excited about that. Number two, I don't know if this was announced when we last recorded. Probably not. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutants in Manhattan, which is the new Platinum games. Same people who did Transformers Devastation, which I've enjoyed quite a bit. Looking forward to that engine, that kind of combat in the TMNT universe. And number one, it's got
to
be Uncharted. I mean, how can it not be?
Well, there's a few ways. one way, in my opinion. Now, my number five, I will say this. Ratchet and Clank, I would have probably included the remake, but it's out now. Haven't had a chance to play it because I was trying to finish Quantum Break before we recorded. And I am excited for that. And Mighty Number 9 is my honorable mention. And three games that I would have put on my list, but there is no way in hell they're coming out in 2016, are The Last Guardian, Horizon Zero Dawn, and ReCore. So to the top five, number five, this is one of them is a Frank pick. It's a tie. Hot Shots Golf for PS4. imagine golfing in VR. Oh, baby, that's going to be beautiful.
That would be good.
I can't wait. And a tie, No Man's Sky. Have my doubts, but it comes out on my birthday. Like, I gotta be all in on this game. It's my birthday release.
That's definitely an honorable mention for me.
So if they get it right, it could be the best birthday I ever had since Minority Report. Number four, Tuck City. So disappointed in you right now. Doom. We're getting a new Doom this year, and we know we're getting it. It's coming out. The launch date is here. It's not this Lost Horizon game that they pimped out at E3, getting people excited, and it's 2018 release, Doom. Number three, disappointed in both of you, Cuphead. We've been waiting on Cuphead.
Yeah, honorable mention for me. I just, you know, we mentioned it a lot in the past.
But what I'm intrigued by is originally the game was only boss fights, and it seems like they've expanded the gameplay quite a bit. So... could be good or bad. I'm intrigued still. Can't wait. Give me this fucking game already. I think there's a chance it might not be till 2017 too. Other than Doom and Uncharted, which is my next game, all of these could also slip. Well, I guess No Man's Sky. And number one, I'm counting on it coming out this year, and this is the game I'm most excited for. If it comes out, I feel like I know what Uncharted 4 is going to be. What I want to see is New Zelda on NX or Wii U this year.
It could happen, but it probably won't.
I would say it will happen.
Well, I guess we do know that pretty holiday. Good chance the NX is coming out
holiday season
by the
sure.
end of the year,
I think,
right?
November 27th, you'll get Zelda, maybe not on Wii U on that date. That might get delayed to later. Yeah. But Zelda NX will be out on November 27th.
I mean, the only thing I would say, like, I do think NX will be out by the end of the year. The thing with Zelda is we've still seen so little of this game. Don't you think?
I agree, but hey, the art style is amazing. That's why it's my most anticipated. I agree, it could be bad. This isn't the games I guarantee are going to be good. It's, I want to see what this game is, how Nintendo... embraces the Western gaming world, which they say they're adopting in this game more heavily than other ones, although Final Fantasy said that and that's a disaster. But this, I'll get back to it. I know we've lost some perspective here, but the idea that when you're, do you remember the original video that Razzle Dazzled when they showed it? And I said, there's no way that's running on a Wii U.
Is that
and,
the one where the horse could
yes,
run to the mountain?
But, right, or the fact that you don't have to tell your horse where to go when you're shooting and doing things. Your horse, in real life, when you're on a horse, you don't have to steer it all the time. It's a living thing. It does things. Principles like that that Nintendo will bring to an open world game, I'm curious to see.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely curious, definitely excited. I just don't think it will be out this year.
Guaranteed, Sean. I'll bet my life.
I got a couple other honorable mentions, games that I don't think we've talked about or maybe weren't even announced the last time we recorded, but Shakedown Hawaii. It's the new game from the guy who did Retro City Rampage. Bringing it into the 16-bit era, I believe, and kind of similar style game, but looks like fun. Have you guys seen anything about this game, Everything?
I heard rumors about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, I don't really understand what it is, but it is an intriguing concept where it's essentially...
Every object becomes a playable character or something?
Yeah, everything in the world, you can control it somehow. And it seems like it's kind of more of an experience than a game. I don't know, but it sounds kind of cool.
Is this like a up the ante version of that Double Fine game?
I mean, that's what
hack and slash or whatever.
Or are you thinking the one with the Russian dolls or whatever?
No, not stacking.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Oh, I was thinking of the hack and slash. Couldn't you like inject code or something, like hack anything in the world?
Yeah, I mean, it could be kind of
like
that. Yeah,
I don't know.
But
well, it reminds me a bit of that Dreams game that was announced for PS4 as well,
right.
With where you manipulate anything and make these kind
of
weird.
Of course, what? The new
Doom.
Quantum Dream. No. Carmack's out, I'm out.
Detroit Become Human?
Yeah, Detroit Become Human.
That was on my honorable
that is
mention
not
list. That's not coming out this year.
Carmack's out,
no
I'm
chance.
Out, Frank.
I guess so, that's fair. All right, fair enough.
And the only other thing I was going to mention, and this one I'm pretty sure is not this year either, but we just saw a teaser trailer for Titanfall 2. Single player campaign, I'm in.
All right.
Crickets.
Apparently. Alright, let's get into some other stuff we've played over the past few months. Should we start with the only thing we've all played?
What's that?
The Witness, I think.
Oh yeah, that game.
Did anybody finish it though?
Nope.
No.
I was pretty into it for a couple weeks there and then kind of fell off. But
now that I'm done Quantum Break, I do want to get Ratchet and Clank. I might hit a PS4 phase over the next 2 weeks and return to it. I really liked it. I think it is immersive and fun. I just I hit a point where early in the game, I hit a puzzle that I literally figured out, and it's complicated. It's like color blending and all this stuff. And do you know the one? Did any of you guys hit this where you go up an elevator and you're masking colors through color filters? It's like a building.
No, I don't
the whole
think I got to
the whole structure of this puzzle is like building up levels of color masking. And I, in my mind, I had it figured out. I had diagrams drawn and I'm an idiot. Basically, I didn't have it figured out because it didn't work. But when I felt I had the essence of a puzzle and through numerous tries, I just wasn't getting the feedback I needed. I know people will say, oh, you leave it then, you come back to it, which I'm cool with. The problem is getting places and leaving and coming back to things or remembering where things are, there's no support systems for that in the game. And
yeah, it's so huge.
Unless I sit down and play this thing over 3 days and remember everything, it's just a little too slow-paced to do that. So it's too slow-paced to want to play beginning to end all the way through. And it's not...
It's too long to do that, too.
Yeah, it doesn't support you enough to remember things or keep track of things when you come back to them later. I like the gradual learning system and discovery aspect of the game. I think it is a very good game. I'm not saying it's a bad game at all. I just think there are some things that would help it and not necessarily ruin the fun of the puzzles, like just kind of ruin the whole concept of the game. I think there are subtle ways they could have like gated things or informed players just to approach things more in the appropriate direction. Like, I'm not going to an area that I have no chance of figuring this puzzle out right now. I can like at least guide me through the learning process a bit better.
Yeah.
So maybe we should set it up just for anybody who's not aware. So this is the new game from Jonathan Blow. He did Braid, kind of. That was one of the first big indie games that was just like embraced by critics and was like, you know, this huge thing. And so this is like a really ambitious game. You're kind of exploring this mysterious island, I guess kind of in the vein of something like Myst, but you know, every corner of this island, there are puzzles and you kind of just come across them and you're not given instructions on how to solve them. You just kind of start fiddling with stuff until you figure it out. And that's it, essentially. And I really like the game. I was in a real puzzle game kind of phase for a while there. I was playing Talos Principle. I was playing the Room games on iOS. But something about the open worldness of this, like, it's cool in the sense that, like you said, Frank, you get stuck on a puzzle, you can go try something else. But it did feel like if I get stuck on a puzzle and I leave it, I will never get back to that again. And something about that was a little bit frustrating for me.
I do like the... There's also a lot of hidden stuff, which I didn't even know until I was talking to Alex at Pixelnauts, and he was like, "Oh, have you found any of the black pillar puzzle ones?" And I had seen these black pillars, which are just scattered throughout the world in weird places, but I didn't realize how you did it, because they don't tell you anywhere really. And it turns out
I found some of that stuff. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's all like perspective based puzzles within the world itself. So basically every puzzle, the basic concept is the same. You start at a dot and then you trace some pattern to reach an endpoint. And there are hidden puzzles within the geometry of the world where from a certain perspective, a little bubble will appear and then like a little circle start point, and then you can click on it and then it will display a puzzle within the geometry of the world instead of on these boards like all the other puzzles are. And that kind of design is like, the design of this game is incredible. That one, they came up with so many puzzles, and two, that they were able to embed them in so many places. And I do like how they have very segregated worlds. So they have the, you know, the green area, the desert area, the town, the quarry, the apple orchard. They have like very specific levels, and you can trace where you've been by which power cables are lit, I guess, or powered on. But I have the same gripe as you guys, is that trying to come back to it, you just forget what you've done, and you're kind of wandering around aimlessly if you can't figure out something, trying to find other puzzles you haven't done.
Yeah, it feels like just a little navigation system might have helped a little bit.
Yeah.
Two things I would say. You don't have to tell me where the puzzles are to start, but you could have a map and tell me
how many maybe you completed.
When I found one and when I left and couldn't do or something like that. I don't know the end game, but I'm guessing the reason they didn't do that is because there are these puzzles scale outwards. And I'm assuming eventually the whole island itself is a puzzle. And by having a map of that, it's revealing stuff later in the game, which is a problem. So I kind of give them the benefit of the doubt on that. The other thing, just let me move faster. give me a way to move faster. If I want to explore things, or I get stuck somewhere and want to go somewhere else, let me do it
maybe
way faster.
Mark a point that you can come back to later or something.
Or
like that.
Fast travel locations. I don't know. Like,
they do have stuff. Some slight fast travel stuff with the boats.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's not really that great.
So, I think half of my problems with this game are on me and my ability to play it all the way through or devote the appropriate amount of time you need to enjoy this game. But I do think there are, for someone who doesn't have a lot of time, like, there are just things that can make the game better. And I do also respect the game for not doing that, too. I could say, oh, well, we're not going to make this like every other game that tells you where to go and what to do. It's an experience. So I think that's cool too. I just don't know when I'm going to get to devote the right amount of time to play it the way it's intended to be played.
Yeah. Another minor thing again, like these are just like, I feel like it's just a little bit of UI stuff. Like, and you know, they clearly made a point. We don't want to hold your hand through any of this, but it's just like a little bit of that could help so much, you know. Like, there's just stuff where you solve a puzzle and you might not even know you solved it, you know, or you solve a puzzle and it has an effect on the world, something else opens up, but you don't even know like what opened up.
Yeah.
And that to me is just a little bit like, that takes away from the feeling of reward when you actually do solve a puzzle, which I think is an important part of a puzzle game. So yeah, I mean, those are my complaints. I still really like it and would like to get back to it.
It's got a great atmosphere. And obviously, there's a story they're telling through the environmental storytelling, but it's just such a huge game.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem accomplishable for me. Unless
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I have two things that, like, simple things that would make me way more intrigued to play the game. One I said, which is, let me move faster, however that is. And number two, there are some, for an open world exploration game, there are times where you can see down to the ground below you and you can't jump down there. There's collisions on bridges and stuff like that, and you have to literally go up the stairs they've deemed the correct stairs to get around the world, rather than just jumping on things or jumping off of things. And that kind of breaks the illusion of an open world game. It's, you can't have both. It's either open world or it's not. You have to make things so big that you can't do that. If I see a 3-foot drop that anyone would drop down and I can't do that in that game, you're kind of, you want your cake and eat it too scenario when you're designing that stuff.
Yeah.
And obviously they do it because there's situations in the game that break puzzles, or it just doesn't work the way they've set up the puzzles. And I get it. It's a minor gripe, but I'm surprised that hasn't been called out more.
Yeah. Well, like, it's the navigation itself is a puzzle sometimes, like trying to figure out how to get from one place to another. But, you know, you're used to an open world game being very open and just, you know, you can explore anywhere you want, but there are just, you know, hidden invisible collisions and stuff that pop up that are just weird.
Yeah. I do like how, at least most of the puzzles I've played, they're not timing based, so you're not kind of needing to rush anywhere.
That's true, yeah.
It's kind of just, you can be methodical and just take your time, and as long as you don't step on the wrong thing,
yeah,
you don't get penalized for it.
I assume there's a huge subgroup of people who have no interest in this game, who would completely hate this game. But if puzzles are your thing, it really is just kind of a kickback, and you take your time to,
yeah, it's kind of relaxing almost.
Yeah, definitely.
So there's no real background, there's no music, there's no score, you're kind of just environmental sounds. It's kind of like walking through nature and doing some puzzles here and there. And
yeah,
it has this weird kind of relaxing quality to it. I don't know. It's kind of weird to explain until you get too frustrated and then have yeah. to walk somewhere else.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Well, why don't we just like go around and each do like one game at a time, so we're not all talking for too long.
Okay, I can.
Or a couple at a time.
I can start. I've been playing the Go series of games, Hitman Go and Lara Croft Go, on iOS, and I've been really enjoying those. Another puzzle game, another two puzzle games. Hitman Go came out first, and I played it second, though, actually. I played Lara Croft Go first. There was some sale for $2 or something. And really like those games. They're really well designed. They look great. Or at least the Lara Croft game is more action-y. And the Hitman Go game is, I think they're representing a board game.
Right.
But the basic concept is you take your character, either Agent 47 or Lara Croft, and there is a grid on the level of where they can move, and you can basically only move one square at a time, and the game board moves when you move. So it's turn-based puzzle game with hazards, enemies that move with you. So there's different types of enemies. Enemies that stand still that will only attack you when you get right in front of them. There are like spinning spike traps that move along a path. There are enemies that when they see you, they'll chase you, and so you can't get cornered. Enemies that move in a particular path along, like without reacting to you at all. Traps where you trigger switches and stuff like that. So it's very, but just very well designed. There's, I think, 5 or 6 levels with hidden items in them. And if you find all the hidden items, it actually unlocks a 6th level, I believe, that you can play. And I really enjoyed the Lara Croft game, and then I went and bought the Hitman game, and I'm about maybe a quarter of the way through the Hitman game. So if people are fans of puzzle games, even just playing a game, a good quality game on your phone, I recommend these games. They're a lot of fun, and you can play them in quick little sessions. Each level is probably only a couple minutes to beat. It's really good.
Yeah, I like the Lara Croft one. I was not thinking about the Hitman one, but I guess I should probably check that one out at some point too.
Yeah, it's not as good as the Lara Croft one, in my opinion, but it's basically the exact same game. Very similar.
Cool. Frank, I know you got a couple big recent releases to talk about.
Yeah, should we start with Quantum Break?
Sure.
As I just completed it minutes before recording.
Beautiful.
It's a really tough game to nail down, and it suffers from some of the same things as The Order did to me. While I can appreciate an emphasis on storytelling, I still am not that crazy about the story or the TV elements. I think the capture scenes look good, and it is an interesting attempt to tell a time travel story. It's not the worst thing, but it's very convoluted as well. So I think maybe on a replay, I might appreciate it more, but I just wish there was more action. Like, I love the gun mechanics. I like freezing time and doing all this stuff. And I feel like the same way The Order had this kind of pacing set up, they only had a few here and there, and they had these ideas, and they didn't want to, you know, have it become a wave of enemies type game where it is a story, essentially. I get that, but I actually found the gameplay fun. So I wish there was a bit more gameplay and more setups in the game where I was fighting bad guys or bosses. There's a semi-boss towards the end that is awful. Like, I didn't even know what was going on. It's really barely even a boss. And there is another boss I was expecting to fight. Like, I felt like the game was building to this other boss, and it doesn't happen. So I don't know if that's DLC or what, but that whole story thread is weird. In terms of the acting, I'd say it's half and half. I think this Sean Ashmore is good. And what's the guy from Game of Thrones is okay. It is TV stunt casting the movie. It's like people from the Wire, Lost. What's another one that's in there? Oh, Game of Thrones. It's like all these popular shows. Okay, I get it. And then there's some new actors that I've never seen before, And I guess it's because they're probably not that great. They're not horrible, but that's where the acting suffers the most. And the script is so annoying. It is so juvenile. It says fuck every 3 seconds, and it's so unnecessary. Again, it feels like a video game script. It does not feel like a movie script. And until they find a way to write like movies do, I don't... Is there too much to tell? Are they telling too much story? There's so many things going on in the game that I don't know if that... It obviously makes it harder to tell a concise story and have great writing, I think. And then one more thing, suffers from the same problem as Alan Wake, where tons of narrative stuff, like optional things to find, and I find I focus on those things and get dragged out of the game, and I want to read these things because they say it enhances the story, and it just doesn't enhance the story enough, and it feels like a chore doing this stuff. So a lot of positives in terms of gameplay, polish, presentation. I admire the attempts of the game, but just did not hook me. And was, some of the puzzle sequences where you have to use your time bending abilities, super frustrating. Died on those, and the feedback or knowing when you're safe for stuff like that was not great in the game. I think it's about, if I had to give it a score out of 5, it's like a 3.5 around there type thing.
Well, I only played a little bit of it, basically the first act so far, and my initial impression is I'm kind of the opposite of you. Like, I was intrigued by the story. I agree some of the dialogue is a little bit, like, it feels like video games trying to, you know, take us seriously. You know, we're swearing, we're doing mature things here. But there's, like, the time travel element was kind of interesting, and some of the backstory for the characters I found interesting. And then when the action stuff started to play out, I don't know, I felt like it was, you know, it's one of these games where the controls just feel slightly clunky to me. Like, you know, you feel like their focus was on the story stuff, but they wanted to have some action as well, but they didn't put as much time into it. Like, you know, it doesn't feel polished like a Gears of War or an Uncharted or something like that.
While you're saying that, I would say I had a similar thing, but almost opposite, where when I was in a battle, I found the controls really good. When I was like freezing time, using time bombs, time shields, all that stuff is good. Where the controls were clunky for me were just walking around and climbing stuff. That felt
annoying. That is true as well. Maybe I just didn't quite get the hang of the time stuff. Like, I found the first couple sort of combat situations where you're supposed to use time skills, I was dying a lot, and then I slowly started to realize, because, like, I don't know, my initial way of playing an action game almost always is to basically just charge at the guy and start shooting. It's not a cover-based game. I mean, you can, I guess it will kind of react to the environment a little bit and have you hide behind stuff if you're close to it, but it's not like there's a button to duck behind things in this game.
No. You essentially are intended to create your own cover with time shields and by slowing enemies down.
Right. So I started to realize that it's actually more effective to just kind of stay where you are and use these things. And I started to get the hang of it just at the end of my play session, I guess. So maybe it will improve, but I don't know. I just, it just felt a little bit generic, some of the abilities and stuff. But I did think that it was a pretty polished game overall. Not sure how I feel about the TV stuff yet. Like, I guess I've only seen one. So I guess the idea is that they've shot episodes of a TV show that's in the background that ties in.
Yeah, that are clearly characters that they did not want to model and do all the artwork for.
Yeah.
Because they don't appear in the game.
Is it all optional to watch that stuff or what? Like,
I don't think so. I think it's pretty integral to the story. And they have a time ripple system where these little things in the game affect small scenes in that story. but they're so small. It's a, it is not a branching path. Like I am also intrigued by Until Dawn, and I feel like that and the quant, what's the name of that place again? Quantum Dreams. Quantic Dreams, pardon me. They are doing way better jobs of branching story and all that kind of stuff.
It did feel a little bit like those games, and obviously those games generally aren't that action-y, but I actually think I preferred them just because they seem more cutting edge in terms of what they're doing with story stuff. This kind of feels like it's trying to do both, and it kind of just ends up being okay at both. That being action stuff and, you know, storytelling. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like they could have eliminated characters. Like, there's almost too many characters in this game.
Yeah.
There's too much going on. Again, respect the attempt. Don't know if it's the most fun game I've ever played. And I have a feeling when I play Uncharted in however many weeks, it's going to make this look laughable in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Now, it is the same people who made Alan Wake, right?
Yeah.
Which do you prefer?
They're very similar to me. I think I enjoy the mechanics of Quantum Break more. I like the gunfighting. I was really invested in that. I think there are some spots or enemy grenades that take your powers away that could have been the feedback or GUI could have been better to the player as to what's going on there. But overall, I thought it was a lot of fun, the action. And I was very satisfied with that, more so than Alan Wake. I think I like Quantum Break more than Alan Wake. Jesus Christ.
I guess there's a pre-order deal where you can, in some cases, get Alan Wake, or I think mine, I got the Alan Wake American Nightmare.
You should get both. You should have got American Nightmare right away when you pre-ordered. Did you pre-order or no?
Yes.
Yeah, so then you should have a message waiting for you in your inbox on Xbox that has a code for Alan Wake now and Quantum Break for Windows 10. And the game has the ability to use cross saves. So I didn't get a chance to try it. I tried installing it at work, but I never actually played it to just pick up the game, which is apparently works amazing, but cannot verify.
Hmm. Okay. Cool. Huck City?
Okay. I played a pair of Metroidvania games. One game I think we talked about, I think you had played already, Zeo Drifter.
Yeah.
I've tried it before, I think like before last show, and enjoyed what I played, but didn't really get into it. And then one day, my son was sick, and I just kind of like sat with him on the couch and played this game and really got into it, played like a 3-4 hour session, and then finished it off the next day, and really enjoyed sort of the bite-sized planets and being able to go back and forth. There's like 4 planets you travel to, and each one is their own little Metroidvania area, demanding you kind of have to return to each one as you gain more abilities and you can unlock more areas. The areas are still pretty bite-sized though, compared to larger scale sort of Metroidvania games. And I really appreciated that. The mechanics are pretty good too. Shooting and I don't know, I played it a while ago, but there's like a fast run and a jetpack thing, and all those seem to work really good. And and the other one was, they have basically one boss type, if I recall, for each area. It's the same boss, but they each integrate the new mechanics into you needing to beat them. So they start off, and I believe you could just shoot the first one, and then eventually you have to sort of transfer between the foreground and the background to start beating them, and then you have to use some other techniques, I think. I don't know.
I think I only saw one boss fight in the game.
Oh, okay. Well, there's 5, I believe.
Okay. I got stuck for some weird reason in that game. I don't remember what it was. It was like I could go between a couple different planets.
Yeah.
And each one I went to, I hit a roadblock, and I was kind of stuck, and I never got back to it.
Yeah, I think that's where I might have got to sort of my first time through. And then the second game I played was Axiom Verge, which you've obviously played, Sean, and very Metroid-like, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I like the weapons so far that are in it. There's they sort of put a twist on traditional Metroid game guns, weapons. But I found that the game doesn't gate you as well as in a traditional Metroid game, where I feel almost lost. Whereas in traditional Metroid games, they kind of keep you to a small area, beat that, you unlock a weapon to move to the next area. You might come across a few doors here and there that lead to other areas you can't get through, but you're never really going too far in a straight line without realizing you've missed something or something like that. Whereas in this game, I found I was going... So like in Super Metroid, for instance, you have like Brinstar or whatever it's called and whatever the areas are. But you never really like go from like area 1 to area 2 to area 3 to area 4, unlocking something in area 4, then come all the way back. And in this game, you seem to do that a lot. And I was always getting worried I was doing the wrong thing. So I did a lot of extra backtracking that wasn't needed because I thought, okay, now I've unlocked the thing. I need to go back to where I started, and I didn't. So then I had to go back all the way through different areas to unlock more stuff. And maybe that's just on me for not reading the game and not just kind of pushing forward constantly. But I found it kind of frustrating that I kept doing all this backtracking when I didn't need to, or I didn't have the right thing to sort of get through. And there was tons of branching paths off each way as I progressed further through each level of the dungeon. I don't know exactly how far I am through the game, but I haven't beaten it yet. Overall, I'm enjoying it, though. And it definitely captures that Metroidvania essence of a Metroid game. And I do want to go back and finish it, but just haven't found the time.
I'd say my two biggest gripes with those two games, just from what I've seen, I haven't played the Drifter one, is they are trying to match the visual style of Metroid too much. Like, they have the bubble textures that are straight out of Metroid for NES and all these things. It's just a little too similar. It doesn't define itself that well.
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely a straight-up homage.
Yep.
I mean, I didn't find too much backtracking from when I was playing it. I mean, maybe it was like 5 hours in, something like that. But it's coming out for Vita soon, I think. So I might...
I think it's out now.
Is it? So I might try and jump back into that. Okay, well, I'll just quickly mention... I'll mention Firewatch, which I played a bit of. Would like to go back and finish it. It's a fairly short game from what I understand, so I think I could actually do that. So this is one of these walking simulator games, as people like
our
to
favorite.
Call them. I don't really like the term personally. To me, it's like, you know, like what you could just call every other game a shooting simulator then. Like, I mean, just the difference is that it's not action, it's exploration and dialogue mostly in these kinds of games. And
the difference is shooting things is fun and walking is boring.
You know, I guess it depends. Like, I've experienced a few of these games. I haven't found one that I've really disliked yet. I haven't played Gone Home yet. I would like to play Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. I haven't played that yet. There's a few others, but so far what I've seen, to me, this is just a kind of opening the doors of what you can do in video games, and you can tell deeper stories, you know, and that's the interesting thing about this, is it's just a story about a guy who's, at a certain point in his life, decides to become a park ranger, and, you know, you have a radio, and you're basically, there's one other person that you're communicating with. And, you know, she's telling you, oh, you need to go check on these kids over in this area of the park. This is happening. And so you're kind of exploring the park, but you have these objectives along the way. And as you explore, you know, a story is unfolding and you're getting to know this this woman on the other end of the radio as well. And, I mean, I guess I can't really say until I see where the story goes, but I'm certainly intrigued and love the visuals.
Let me know when you finish it, because I do want to play it at some point, but I have some ideas as to where the story is going to go, and I want to see if I can...
Just based on your gift?
Yes, my gift.
Okay.
So let me know when you finish it, and I'll
okay.
I'll test the waters.
Okay. Yeah. No. But I've enjoyed it, and I will hopefully go back to it. And I guess maybe worth mentioning that Ollie Moss is one of the guys that is doing the art for the game. So if you're a fan of his posters that he's done and other stuff, then you might want to check it out. Frank, what do you got for us?
I guess I'll talk about The Division, which I've played a lot more of it than I thought I would. Dax and I played a bunch last week, and I'm enjoying it a lot more than I thought
Where
I would.
Where is Dax? Is he there right now?
No.
Jeez. I was going to say, this guy just hiding from us?
He's gone. The game is mechanically pretty fun. I enjoy it. Way better with other people. Don't really care about the story. I think it's just, it is what it is. It's an MMO, like Destiny, third person in a post-apocalyptic world after a virus is transmitted via Black Friday on money. Yeah, so that's kind of cool. Nice. But I do love the environment, and specifically, if I can call out one thing, it's New York. But what I love about it is because it's Black Friday, it is around Christmas, the setting in the city. So everything has Christmas lights wrapped around it. There's huge store displays with Christmas lights and stuff like that. And that freezing a city in time like that is an awesome idea. And it's a visually appealing time to do that. So I think that was an excellent art design decision. And I mean, I haven't gone that far into it. It might get boring after a while, but playing with friends, I've really enjoyed so far.
Okay, Huck City.
Let's see here. I beat Undertale, which was the big RPG rave of...
Yeah, this game is crazy.
I gotta play this thing.
No, you don't. So... Yeah, this is like a journalist's wet dream RPG game.
Well, not just journalists. Like it's just a game that came out on Steam. Nobody had really heard anything about it.
Yep.
And then it just took over, and like there, you know, it was pretty famous because there was a poll going on. Was it on GameFAQs? Or
I don't recall this.
Some site was doing a poll, like greatest video game
of all time. Game FAQs, yeah.
There is something about this game that resonates with young gamers. Like,
yeah,
I would say 18 to 24 range. Like it, the type of humor they've grown up with memes and, you know, internet humor. This just hits all those sweet spots. It is a game for them. Now, I haven't played it enough to say if it's for me or not. I've just watched a few things with it, but I got to see what the hype is all about. Either I got to take a huge shit all over this game or blow my load all over it.
Well, it'd be interesting.
Huck City will do that for you right
it'll
now.
Be interesting to get your opinion on it, because for me, I know I talked a bit about it the last episode, but I can't remember exactly what I said. But the battle system is pretty fun. They have basically each battle you can either fight or try to talk your way out of it, or run, I think. And there are different ways to play through the game, and they result in different endings. So I think there's, they call it the pacifist way, where you don't kill anybody, even the bosses. Then there's the whatever killer way, where you kill everything. And there's sort of like middle of the road. So apparently I got the middle of the road ending. And... regardless of that, when you fight, you have this little box at the bottom. So it pops up. It's kind of like your traditional Dragon Quest style battles. There's enemies. You choose to fight them. But when you fight them, it's not just you watching an animation of, you know, a swing of a sword or anything like that. It's a little mini game that goes on where you have a heart in the middle and that represents you, and you're trying to avoid things that are coming at you in different patterns or dropping by. There's things that heal you that are color different. There's things that only hit you when you move. There's things that hit you only when you don't move. And just little tweaks here and there on each thing. And the way that's paced out and them adding those things throughout the game is really well done. But the thing is, from the game's about 6 hours long, I think. From about hour zero to hour five, I solved, I think, two puzzles. And most of it was literally just traversing this huge world. It's like a walking simulator RPG where nothing happens except you're interrupted by, I guess, these meme joke things that happened that I didn't find that funny at all. And most of it's just, to me, it was just pointless dialogue of trying to reinforce the fact that you're trying to get to point B. And I didn't find it very funny. I mean, some of the characters are memorable, mainly to me, not because of what they say, just because they pop up so often and they're just there. And some of them are just annoying. I guess maybe that's part of the humor. I don't know. And then, so for me, the end is kind of shocking. There's like a break the fourth wall, mind fuck moment that nice. Dwyer would just cream all over. So maybe I'll spoil that in a bit, but yeah, I think that's what has got most of the journalist people, all over for this game. 'Cause the end definitely kind of messes with you. But everyone was like, oh, you got to play through multiple times. And I cannot foresee myself getting all the endings.
It's only 5 hours long.
Yeah, but it's like 4 hours of boredom and the occasional battle here and there. And I've heard that if you try to do the pacifist way, it gets very hard because like your level is so low that you don't have much health, so you can't really take any damage as you're trying to talk your way out of certain battles. And the other thing I've heard that it does, which I won't find out, is that you play through once and it remembers your save file from that playthrough. So when you play through a second time, I don't know if things change, but dialogue reflects choices you made the first time. So it sort of breaks the fourth wall in that respect as well. So I think, I don't know, I don't have the memory for that sort of storytelling. So all that stuff would probably just wash over me anyways. I wouldn't remember what I did the first time. So it really is not a game for me if that's sort of what they're going for. The sort of deep, you know, layered storytelling aspect. So maybe other people will really enjoy this game. But for me, it was not. I would maybe give it a 2.5 out of 5 if I had to give it a score. From like an RPG aspect, I like the battles, but it's not very deep. Like there's no real armor system. There's no real purchasing of things. There's no money, whatever you call it.
Currency?
Yeah, well, there's a currency, but you don't really have to do that much managing of your money in any way, shape, or form. You don't have to grind for money, or you don't have to make hard decisions of what to buy or anything like that. So, I don't know, just for me, it's just kind of like a wash. Like, yes, I played it. I didn't really enjoy it that much. The end boss was enjoyable just because the twist that happens right before it.
I got to say, I'm kind of intrigued. No grinding, no money, no gear bullshit. Like, this sounds like.
Well, yeah, it's an RPG walking simulator, Frank. So it's a walking simulator with RPG elements.
I'm in.
Yeah, I bet you are.
I mean, I did pick this up on Steam, so I might try and play it at some point. But
yeah, I mean, it's probably worth a try, I guess. I mean, the battle system is good, so I don't know. I don't know. It's hard.
Now,
I'm still confused.
Your you know, is this a competitive thing? Because, you know, it has comparisons to Earthbound and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Citizens of Earth had comparisons to Earthbound. Is that an element of your unwillingness to love this game?
Why, just because this game sold way more copies than Citizens of Earth?
Yeah. Could there be some bitterness here?
I don't know. I don't think so, but it definitely captures that quirkiness of Earthbound. It definitely does that. And I guess in the art style, sort of. But it's not really like SNES graphics.
Yeah.
It's sort of like this hybrid thing. The music's really good in it, which I guess some people might claim the Earthbound music's really good as well. So I don't think so. Answer your question, but maybe I don't know. I may have just so jaded I can't separate myself.
Well, I mean, obviously, when you know come to a game that's hyped like that much, like I don't know if I finished what we were originally saying, but like I think it won that poll of best game of all time, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, the only other thing is there's so many, like I call them like fever dream moments in this game. So you like walk off the path. You go into a house, one moment I'm thinking of, and it's just like there's a bed there. You click on it. It's like, do you want to lay down? And you click yes. And then it just goes into this like starry screen mindfuck moment of like psychedelic shit. And then that lasts for like 30 seconds. And then you just wake up and then just keep walking. Huh. Like it's just randomly thrown in there. Like, hey, wouldn't it be cool to throw a psychedelic mind trip in here? At this random house in the game. I don't know. It was very weird. But stuff like that is kind of scattered throughout this game. And maybe that's the stuff that's resonating with these kids. Maybe they're all on drugs. They're all on the drugs.
Clearly. Yeah. Clearly there.
They didn't grow up in the 80s like we did, where
drugs didn't exist.
Eggs aren't boiling on their frying pan, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I am intrigued as well, but...
This is probably a game for you, Dwyer. I'm not going to lie. You
just give me a console version so I can get some achievements or trophies at least. Please. Fuck.
Steam achievements.
Yeah, I'd be more likely to play it if it was on a console. But Frank, do you want to talk LEGO Dimensions?
Yeah, sure.
Played a fair bit of this. I think I'm like maybe halfway through the main campaign.
Yeah.
I'm at the Ninjago level, I think, right now.
Oh, that's... I think I'm a couple levels past that now.
Yeah.
But, you know, picked it up at Christmas, wanted to play with Kieran. Initially, he wasn't that interested. Although, you know, he loves the LEGO movies, the LEGO movie and other LEGO-related stuff to watch. And he likes the toys. But the game, first, he was a little unsure about, but we eventually got into it. And, you know, I like the element of, there is an element of building in there. Although, for some reason, I wasn't quite sure how this worked. And I guess it makes sense. I don't know why I thought this would matter, but I kind of thought there would be a way that it, like, depending on how you built something, that would be represented in the game. You know what I mean, Frank?
It is kind of, well, like it isn't, but so what you can do is when you upgrade a vehicle, right?
Yeah.
You have to take it apart and rebuild it. And when you bind it to the tag, now it looks like that in the game, but you have to bind it to the tag and tell it, oh, you've changed what this thing does.
Essentially, they have like for each vehicle, like three different ways you can build it. And you tell them, okay, I've currently built it as this, and they save it as that. Which, you know, it's cool, but like I thought maybe, you know, you could totally fuck with it and build something on your own and it would somehow know all these pieces fit together, but obviously that would be insane. The one thing that's kind of interesting is you've got this play, you know, like Skylanders and other games like this where you have like this sort of board that you have to plug in to your system and then you put the toys on the thing, and there's actually puzzle elements with this. So, you know, you might have a boss fight where you have to move the toys around in certain patterns and stuff, which initially I thought was kind of interesting and cool, but did get frustrating from time to time.
It's definitely a thing that I appreciate more than I find fun. I appreciate incorporating the teleporter board into the story of the game, and you're literally finding pieces on your quest to attach to this thing. I think they did a good job of that and incorporating what LEGO is into the game. Again, it suffers from the same gameplay problem as other LEGO games to me, that switches and volumes and doing things is really inconsistent and frustrating in a lot of things.
I still do not understand how these games that should be for kids, should be super simple. Sometimes you're walking around for half an hour trying to figure out what you're supposed to push or what you're supposed to build. Like, you just don't know. Like, it doesn't...
Or you do it and you hit, like, you can't hit the switch I've had, or some...
Yeah, sometimes
like some of their scripting stuff gets screwed up. It was worse in the open world games like LEGO Avengers and stuff, or LEGO Marvel Superheroes. There was quests that were just broken in that game. So I do think it did a good job of incorporating all these different IPs to kind of the same way LEGO Movie did.
Yeah, I think that was my favorite thing about the game. Just that, you know, basically every level you're jumping into some new universe, whether it's The Simpsons or DC Comics or Back to the Future, and it just keeps it interesting and fresh, and you're always kind of wondering what's coming next, you know?
Yeah, and there's a story level for each of those worlds, and you can go to a moderate sized open level world for each of those properties as well. So that's kind of neat. I would say I bought a bunch of the expansion packs. In terms of embarrassing purchases in my life, this is right up there. How much I spent on this game one fucking day when everything was half price on the Microsoft store. I went a little cuckoo bananas. Will not divulge details, but needless to say, I am truly embarrassed.
More or less than what the HTC Vive is going to cost you.
Oh, way less. But that's not even the most embarrassing video game purchase that I had, which I'll get into in what we played in a second. But yeah, again, it's a cool little LEGO game. Appreciate a lot of things about it. I still find for games that are not, I agree, games that aren't that complex, the polish level is not what, and I should add, they make four of these LEGO games a year. Their systems for this stuff are not as polished as they should be.
Yeah, at this point, they should have... It should be just everything's locked down and easy to follow. And
like you said, they're for kids. Like, I'm the loser playing this game. This is supposed to be for a kid. If I can't do it, how the fuck is the kid supposed to do it?
Well, this is the thing. Like, I played with Kieran for the most part, and it was fun, but he would just kind of drive around with the Batmobile and blow shit up. I was, you know, the one who was kind of having to be like, oh, okay, here's the next thing we have to do. And sometimes you need to have two characters doing things, and so I'd have to direct him, and then I'd have to be like moving things on the board, and it's like, and sometimes I couldn't figure stuff out, and then he's just like, "What do we do?" You know, and he's asking me, and I'm just like, "I don't know." You know, it's like sometimes it's stressful playing this damn game.
So. Oh, this is classic Dwight guy. I don't know if we've ever gotten into this on the show, but from what I know, the only thing that really gets Sean angry is like putting stuff together or instructions, which is kind of falls into that realm.
A little bit. But no,
should be instructions on screen and they're not working. And I could totally see you snapping.
It's just like, you know, sometimes it's just chaos, you know, he's just like shooting things and like, there's all these characters running around. And like, there was one level in particular, I can't remember what it was now. Like, I think maybe the Doctor Who one. And there's like sort of like this almost slightly creepy section where there's these statues that freeze in place. Did you get to that, Frank?
No.
Oh, so
I think I'm right at the start of that level, actually.
And kind of freaked Kieran out a little bit. So every time they came on screen, he'd kind of be like, you know, like, just get them out of here, you know, because like the screen would go dark and then... If they get a hold of you, then your thing flashes red, and you got to move the characters off of those squares.
Yeah, that stuff gets annoying.
And so it's like he's like clutching onto me, going like, "Move it, get them out of here!" And I'm like trying to change this thing, and I'm just like, "God!" So it was a little frustrating, but I don't know. Yeah, I've had a pretty good time with the game. I might pick up. I bought one toy for it. For Kieran, essentially, but I would like to get, I think, the Portal expansion and maybe the Ghostbusters or Back to the Future one.
Well, I haven't played as much of the story, but I did play the Portal level, the Back to the Future level, the Ghostbusters level. I think that's it so far. And they were fun.
What about that Midway arcade one?
Haven't gotten that one.
Kind of interested in that one, too, but I'll wait for a big sale. One of these days. So what's your other embarrassing purchase, Frank?
Okay, so I was getting ready for Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2, right?
Yep.
And then, this is hilarious. So, which Dax worked on, I should say, as well. He did a lot of the concept art for that game. And the prepping for it, they had an announcement that your sticker book and characters and all the stuff you unlocked in the first game would migrate over to the new one. So, you know.
So you went a little sticker crazy.
I did. I spent a lot of money on stickers for this game, nice. Which ended up not mattering at all. None of the stickers came over. It was only characters and abilities. So I did my best. I didn't fill the whole thing. I can say that. But I spent some cash and it was for nothing. Although I did love playing the game. So I guess that's reward enough. And I ended up getting every achievement in the original game and all the expansions. So I was playing a fuck ton of that game and loving it. And then the new one came out. I see this stuff doesn't migrate over, and I'm just like, steaming, hating myself so intensely. And then I've been playing the first one a bit. I might have burnt myself out on the old one, but they've added a lot of extra stuff. There's a hub world rather than menus to get into these games. The other one was mostly just matchmaking online-based stuff. The new characters are cool, and it is, I don't know if they've added too much where it almost detracts for me personally, because I was so used to the old game, but the graphics are way better. It looks amazing. I will say that. But I got to play some more. I think I did the classic burn myself out on when you replay a game in preparation for the sequel and you've burnt yourself out on that game for when the actual game comes out. Which I do all the time.
Yeah, I still got to check that game out.
Like, I want to play Uncharted again, but I'm worried I'm just going to completely ruin myself for the new Uncharted.
Yeah, I hear you. Huck City, more stuff?
Yeah, I played, this is the last stuff for me. I played a few adventure title-ish games, adventure games. First one I played was Kentucky Route Zero Act 1. That's a pretty game. They have a really nice art style for that.
I've been wanting to check that out, actually. I don't know if I ended up buying this on Steam or not. I know it was on my wish list.
Yeah, I got it in some sort of bundle something. And I thought I just bought Act 1, but I also have Act 2, so maybe I pre-ordered the whole thing. I don't know. What exactly? Because I think only Act 1 and 2 are out. So Act 1 was actually quite short. I think I beat it in probably an hour and a half.
So is this like a point-and-click type thing or what exactly?
Yeah, it is. So just kind of move through the world and try to figure out what's going on. Actually, it was a while ago I played it, but it has a lot of really subtle artistic imagery going on, and I feel like I might have missed a lot of stuff the first time I played it, just because it seems like they put stuff where your focus is not. So I'm looking forward to playing the other acts, but I think I'm going to just wait until the whole thing's out so I can kind of take it all in one go since it's so short. Then the other adventure games I've been playing is a game called Read Only Memories. It's on Steam. It's basically an homage to Snatcher from the Sega CD days, except it's not about killing cyborg things. It's basically just the visual style, music, feel of the game.
It's like a cyberpunk thing.
Yeah, right? Cyberpunk thing, yeah, but just the music, so many musical cues feel like exactly Snatcher. Like, they literally lifted the sound files off of the CD. That's how close I think they sound. But I've been enjoying it. It's not really that deep or anything, but it's kind of a nice throwback to Snatcher, so I'm kind of having the nostalgia vibes with it. And then the last one I've been playing, which is a little out there, called Danganronpa Trigger Happy Havoc, something like that. It's on Vita.
Sounds like something it's I would play.
Definitely a Japanese-ish game. It's basically a digital anime game. It's very adventure game. You just talk to people.
Like a visual, like one of those visual
novel type thing. Yeah, okay. So it's all about building your relationship with people. But then it's sort of like visual novel meets Ace Attorney, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So the whole premise of this game is you get locked in a school with, I think, 16 other people or something like that. And you can only leave if you're the last person alive. But if you get caught killing someone, you get killed. So it's this really like dark game where, so each day or whatever, there's kind of like each case, let's call it, someone dies. You have to try to figure out who did it. And then at the end, after gathering all your clues and talking to people, there's this weird sort of Ace Attorney type courtroom scene where you try to prove who you think did it, kind of thing, and bring up points. And then you kind of just go on to the next day once you get it right. It's really weird, off the wall. But the characters are all very memorable. I haven't played in probably a month, but I still remember particular characters, and it's kind of shocking when some of them get killed. And it's just this really creepy building, and rooms unlock as people die and new areas open up. So there's constantly new things to explore. It's really interesting. It's rarely gone on sale. The only reason I got it is because it was like 50% off on PSN a few months ago, and it's regularly $40, I think. So it's just kind of it's one of those like long tail games, I guess. Really enjoying it though. It's this weird kind of quirky game for your Vita, which, you know, probably don't have much stuff on the Vita to begin with. But
did you ever play that Zero Escape game, whatever it was called?
No.
It was like Zero Escape Virtue's Reward or something. It was like a sequel to another game on the DS that was pretty popular. And
I think it was even free at one point, wasn't it,
yeah,
Sean?
I think it was on PlayStation Plus. I'm pretty sure I own it. I haven't played it, but it's kind of like one of those visual novel type things. I've always been curious to try it out.
No, I can't say I have.
Okay. How much more do you have, Frank?
I'm just going to talk about one game primarily, and are we talking Miitomo, or do we want to wait?
I think we got to mention it.
Okay, all right. So, first I'll say I purchased and played Far Cry Primal. Didn't really get hooked on Far Cry 4, but, you know, Primal has this huge, like, it's obviously set in prehistoric times, and you're hunting animals and riding animals, and you're the beast master. You're taming these wild beasts from
this has hitting all my
all my buttons. So I gave it a poke and I loved it. I did everything in the game. I got every achievement. I really enjoyed it. I would say towards the end, it got a bit of a chore. It's almost the Ubisoft thing. It's almost too big, too much stuff to do, which can get repetitive towards the end. But I love the actual gameplay and using bow and arrows and hunting and all that stuff. So that was a lot of fun. I would say there is one huge design flaw in the game. If you're trying to do everything, you're leveling up your stuff the whole game and you're killing stuff and getting points towards that. And then out of nowhere, towards the end of the game, you cap out that level and you can only get skill points by completing certain missions. And they don't tell you this at all in the game. And I would have done the missions earlier in the game, so this was all counting towards something that I didn't have to go keep doing stuff, and I'm basically getting no XP for any of this. And I went online and a lot of people were complaining about it. So huge fail on that. Well, huge is a debatable word, but fail on that design wise. But really good game. Liked it a lot. And there was some extra content missions that were terrible, but I won't let that affect what I would give it. A 4.5 out of 5, having done it all, maybe even like 4.75 out of 5. But some of the extra bonus stuff I got are some of the worst missions I've ever played. You channel the spirit of this mammoth, and they are the worst. Absolutely terrible. But the core game itself is amazing.
Nice.
And the other thing I'll mention, which we briefly talked about already, is the Final Fantasy 15 demo, which I thought was horrible.
Did you even make it through the whole thing?
No, I turned it off.
Yeah, okay. So
I loved the look of it, and I mean the controls are terrible. It plays exactly like Kingdom Hearts 1 to me. They have not made any improvements to platforming. The combat's essentially the same as Kingdom Hearts. I didn't get enough weapons to experiment between like changing the mid battle, but I hope this game gets better because I want to love it because I love everything I've seen. Art-wise, world design-wise, creature design-wise, I want to like this game, and that demo put me to fucking sleep. So
yeah,
please improve this.
I feel like this demo was almost like a tech demo they showed like as a proof of concept like years ago, because there was so much just like time of day. Look, you can change the time of day. Look, you can make it rain. Look at the physics in our on our level and all this stuff.
And you go into some level where you're small and it's like a giant world, right? Even that's in Kingdom Hearts from the Alice in Wonderland level in the first game. Like everything in this game, like the using X as a weapon mashing thing, that's Kingdom Hearts combat from what I remember. So
yeah, me too. Yeah.
I'm very, very disappointed.
So what's the deal with this? Is this game coming out soon, or
most likely the fact that they released this demo means that the game is slipping even further?
No, they've announced an official date.
Did they?
September. Yep. I think September 30th or around there.
And is the reception official launch date to the demo generally the same thing you guys have been saying? Or
I don't think so. I think some people really liked it. I know Alex said he liked it quite a bit on Miitomo. I don't know general feedback, but personal feedback, if I had given you my money, I'd want it back. So what can I, it's a free demo. Just please make the game better, because that stank.
That's too bad. Okay, I got a few things. Did you have anything else before we...
No, unless we're talking Miitomo, that's all I got.
We'll do that at the end. I'm just going to burn through a few things. Actually, did you play Unravel or no?
Briefly. I haven't sunk into the entire game.
I played a bit of the like EA Access demo.
Yeah.
That's about all I played.
I played a fair bit of it, and I don't get, like, this is one of those games that the reviews have been pretty mixed, I would say. And I mean, if it's if you looked it up, I'm not sure what it's sitting at on Metacritic, but I'm going to guess it's like in the 70s. You know, it's one of those games.
Yes,
that,
high 70s, I think.
And to me, that is not fair. Like, I think this is a great game. The only criticisms I've seen are that sometimes because it's a lot of puzzle based or physics based puzzles, sometimes things can there's occasionally things that are a little glitchy, which, OK, that's true. But I mean, not. I didn't encounter that too much. And the other thing is just that people think it's like it's trying too hard to be deep and meaningful. And it's like, well, I mean, it's trying. I don't think it's...
What has gone home then?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't... I can't speak to that game. I haven't played it. But to me, like, it was never... I agree it's trying a little hard, but not in an annoying way. I thought the game was actually pretty charming. Like, it's... You know, you control this little yarn guy and he's going through environments that are like photorealistic environments and they look beautiful. I thought the main mechanic of this, you know, yarn trailing behind you and then you use that to swing off of things and you tie knots to things so that you can launch yourself up higher. I thought all that stuff was awesome. Like I was so surprised the first time. Like I thought, oh, this is kind of cool, but it's just going to be kind of an illusion, you know, the idea that this thing is trailing behind you. But I was really surprised the first time when you get to a certain point and you literally run out of rope and you have to go back and rework your way through some of the things so that you can reach where you need to reach because you use too much rope, essentially. I thought that was really cool, and I was surprised that that worked. Like, that seemed like a big deal to have that system in place. The music is, you know, again, maybe another one of those things that makes people think it's trying too hard, but I kind of dug it. It was just sort of this, ambient kind of atmospheric, stuff. I really like the game. I don't understand why it's, it's not getting shit on, but it just feels like this should be like Limbo. It should be one of those games that's getting praised like that, and everybody.
You don't know why, Sean?
No, I don't.
It's EA.
Oh, well, you could be right there, but I mean, it's like, not. It's a little indie developer. It's published by EA, but it's a little indie developer. Like, they even go out of their way to at the beginning of the game. Like, there's some message or something, if I remember correctly, that says, like, you know, we put our heart and souls into this game, so we really hope you enjoy it. Like, something.
Yeah,
that
that's that was lame. I gotta admit, that was fucking lame.
A little lame, but I mean, that at least is going out of its way to say, hey, this wasn't made by some big corporation. Like, we're just a little indie studio.
Well, that's them knowing the EA bias is out there.
Maybe.
And putting that up front. But
yeah.
Ultimately, lame.
I don't know. Maybe the game gets repetitive by the end or something. I can't say for sure, but I feel like it's a lot better than the reviews have been saying.
Yeah, I think I was just waiting for an achievement guide or something to that effect for this game, so I kind of only have to play it once and make sure I get everything when I play it. So yeah. I will definitely play it, though.
I'll just mention The Room 1, 2, and 3. I know you had mentioned it before, Frank. I think Graham had mentioned that he was a fan of The Room and maybe The Room 2. The Room 3 just came out at the end of last year. And just for whatever reason, I finally thought, okay, I'm going to play through these. And I kind of blew through the first two. And The Room 3, originally I was thinking, oh, man, maybe this will be on my top 10 list. You know, it could be one of those games. And it's a lot bigger than the other games, and I kind of like got stuck at some point, and there's a lot of little sub puzzles that you go into in the scenes. And just for people who don't know, it's like, it's a puzzle game. You essentially, it's like a Chinese puzzle box kind of thing where you have these little devices and you kind of flick them with the touch screen and you open up little switches and they reveal things. And I feel like the puzzles themselves aren't that hard to figure out. It's more finding little hidden switches and things that you might not see on first glance. That's more the hard part. But I don't know, really like the first two games, and then kind of maybe I just OD'd too much on them and kind of lost interest for a while. But I just started playing The Room 3 again, and I'm kind of back into it, so maybe I'll finish it. But for, I mean, iOS games, I mean, these are, you know, top of the list for me as well in terms of mobile games that I've enjoyed. I'll mention Box Boy. Don't know if you guys heard of this. It was a 3DS release. And
oh, yeah, this looked really cool.
It's just, like, black and white, super minimal. Like, it looks like an old Game Boy game. But it's just really well designed. It's like a puzzle platformer. Essentially, you're just this guy that can create boxes, and you can create like a single box and drop it and push it onto things or throw it onto things, and then you can create like a line of boxes, and eventually get to the point where you can create like a shape. Like you're trying to get the boxes around corners. You can use them as hooks to hold on to things and pull yourself up. Like, it's just every level they take, it's such a simple thing to some new interesting place. And, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think there's a sequel out in Japan. I don't know if it's coming here or not, but I would be excited to play that. And my mind fuck of the month.
Oh, yeah.
We've been waiting all show.
Yeah, so this one would be on my top 10 list somewhere. Really would love to have you guys play this and get your thoughts on it. I don't know. Maybe you'll hate it. I feel like it is a game that some people love, some people hate. But it's called The Beginner's Guide. It's made by the guy who did The Stanley Parable, which I still have not played but would like to play. So this is, it's just a weird, like, I didn't really know anything about it. Just heard good things and got it on Steam. Decided to check it out. It starts off and it's got this voiceover narration by the guy who actually made the game, basically saying, this is my game, here's what it is. And he's saying he had a friend who was a game designer, and he doesn't do games anymore or something like that, but I'm going to show you some of the games he's made. Like, he's just made little fun prototypes just for the fun of it. And here's a few of them. And it's sort of like open to a scene of something, and he'll be like, oh, walk to this point and see, this is what he designed. And it'll kind of direct you how to play through this little prototype that this guy built. And then the whole thing will kind of fade out and it'll bring you to another one. So at first it just feels like what the hell am I, like, it's almost like a behind the scenes of the making of a game or something, but it's just bits and pieces of games that never got made. And it's really strange, and but at the same time, you're seeing, like, these little prototypes have this, I don't know, there'll be, like, an artistic theme to it that he's kind of explaining to you, or he'll say, oh, here's how the gameplay ties into this idea of this. So it's really interesting in that it makes you think. Like, it's a great piece to give to somebody that, you know, again, if you don't believe video games can be art, this gives you a very good, like, essential walkthrough of how gameplay can be tied into themes that people want to get across and stuff. But then, you know, there's kind of more to it after that, and it leads to a bigger question, which is, like, people don't really know if it seems like the story of this guy that he was friends with is not real. It's all made up, but nobody really knows. It's kind of open to interpretation. So it's just this strange experience that, you know, afterwards you want to read more about it and find out more about it, and it just invites more questions and discussion. So, I mean, it probably falls into this walking simulator type thing, but, I mean, there are elements of gameplay in there. It's not literally just walking through environments the whole time. But I just thought it was a really fascinating experiment. I don't really know what to call it, but I don't know what you guys would think of it at all, but I really liked it. So I guess we'll end with Nintendo's first mobile game, which is Miitomo or Miitomo. I don't know how you want to pronounce it there, Frank, but
did you look it up after we had this discussion on Film Junk?
I did not.
Miitomo, I think. Miitomo.
Sounds okay. That sounds right. What'd you think of this, Frank?
Well, I'm trying to get through what I don't know if you've been playing it recently, because I'm trying to find one of your answers.
I've already kind of lost interest, so I haven't been on in a couple days. But.
So you build your me, and you answer questions, and people come visit your place. And so I'm going through one right now. Let's see if we get someone we know on here that we can get some sound. So, and then you pick your voice when you make your me, and it'll answer these questions, and it answers them and asks them in these like really creepy voice, like this computer generated voice. Okay, yeah, here's one. I'm going to turn this on. This is get a little vibe there. That's the music. Very annoying. So we have a junk mail from Blake in Boston. This is his Miitomo. So
Blake's making a cameo here on Game Show.
Yeah.
As far as life lessons go, when Super Blake was little, he says he learned life lessons. Like porno magazines can be found under rocks in the woods. Can fall face first into poop, and no, it's not cool to cry about it, apparently.
So yeah, that's the I'm not gonna give a heart for that one, Blake, sorry, trying a little too hard there. And you heart answers and reply with comments, and yeah, I'm losing interest as well. There's just too many questions. Like, I wish they would have just had one a day or something, and you have this I'll go in for my daily question, or like the poll thing that was initially a channel on the Wii. There's just too many questions. Well, like, I mean, to filter.
The questions are all it is, right? Like, you log in and it asks you a few questions and then gives you some responses from your friends of questions it's asked them. And other than that, you can dress up your character, take pictures of your character. And there's some mini games where you can win clothing items and stuff, but
I haven't played the mini games. Are they fun at all? Or?
Well, the only one that I think is there right now is it's Plinko, essentially.
Oh, I love Plinko.
But it's...
I'm going to play it right now. 1 second.
It feels like you can... I mean, it really does feel like one of those claw games or something where it's like, you know, the random numbers have to line up just right for you to actually win something. Otherwise, you just get candy or whatever is at the bottom. I was hoping there'd be more to the mini games, to be honest with you, but I get why, like, Nintendo, to me, they're just trying to create something that's got a hook, like it's, you know, it's like Snapchat or something like that that's going to keep people coming back and connecting with their friends. It's not really supposed to be an actual game. I don't know what the end game is. I feel like this is the start of them building out some sort of mobile presence, but I don't know where they're going to go from here.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, like I said, I played around with it for a couple days, thought it was kind of funny and stuff, and now I've already forgotten about it, so don't think I'll be playing it too much, but
maybe I can find a Dwight guy answer here. 1 second.
Maybe if they introduce some new mini games or things in there, I might be more interested.
1 sec. never mind. He hasn't played in a while. This is... Oh, okay. Oh, here we go. Classic Dwight guy here. Oh, I can't replay the question? Okay, here we go.
You crazy.
Here we go.
You crazy.
Oh, that's my... It's... What did you... Oh. This is so stupid. How do I just play Dwaga?
Amazing interface on this thing.
I just want to play the whole thing. It's...
Hulk
what did
City,
you do
how
last
come you didn't
weekend?
Download this thing?
And he... Dwight said dropped acid.
I don't play stupid games like this that have no point.
Fair enough. That's all you really need to say. All right. Let's get to some junk mail. GameJunkPodcast@gmail.com is where you can reach us. We actually didn't get that much new stuff, but we had some stuff left over from the last show. So let's try and let's just clean this up if we can. and Frank, I don't know if can you load up the email over there or something just in case, or Huck City, I don't know if you have it on your phone, because I might start coughing or losing my voice. I don't
know. Sure.
Just need a backup email reader. Okay, Jared says, "Dear Game Junk, Street Fighter V might be my favorite game in the history of games, but it's literally not finished. I paid $60 for this. I agree that people go overboard with the whole complaining about patches routine, but this is a bridge too far. This game is about 4 months from resembling a complete game. I'd much rather wait 4 months and play it properly. This is some PC shit. Please, no."
I haven't played it enough to know, but apparently there's no arcade mode whatsoever. Someone at work told me that. You can only play online or practice, which seems like a bit of a problem.
That is a little questionable.
Don't quote me on any of the stuff. This is all hearsay. But, yeah, seems like they needed to get some cash flowing on this, and that a lot of games are shifting to stuff like this and adding features as they go, or early access, and
like, why not slippery, just make it an open beta slippy. Or something, right? Like,
yeah, I don't know. So they can't make money that way.
Did they say they're going to patch it in, or is everything else DLC?
I don't know, but it again is another entry in this trend of games that ship with minimum functionality and add it as they go. At least Killer Instinct did it in a way like they had seasons and were upfront about how they were deploying content, and it was a cheaper game. So I kind of like what they've done there, and they just keep adding more stuff to a game and making it bigger and bigger. So I feel like there's, if you need to do a structured payment or cash flow model for a game, there are proven examples that work out there, and this just seems like a bad idea.
I mean, I definitely get that a game like this, you know, requires tons of tweaking and like tuning from, you know, just throwing it out there and getting people actually playing this thing. But yeah, I mean, if there's actual gameplay modes missing and things like that, that does not seem right.
I just want to check and see how much this game was when it launched.
He said $60.
So it probably was $80 in Canada then.
Yeah. Right.
Crazy.
I mean, I guess in a way it's the same complaint as something like Titanfall coming out and being just multiplayer only, but at least they're upfront about that. I don't know what was promised with Street Fighter. All right. So Blake says, "Dear Game Men, I was playing Quantum Break, which I'm sure Frank will bring up the wire stunt casting aspect at some point. And as the camera smoothly transitioned from a stunning cinematic to the over-the-shoulder camera to reveal that I was indeed in control of my character, for a moment I was a mouth breather and let out an audible, wow. I fell for it. It's a video game trope that's been used for quite some time, but this gimmick just worked for me." Which leads me to my question. Has any transition into gameplay effectively left your jaw agape? Mind you, this visual mechanic isn't only isolated to third-person games. See you in Miitomo, Blake. P.S. Now that Frankie has broken me down on procuring an Xbox One, what should I buy? I also never owned an Xbox 360, so backward compatibility games are fair game. So I guess he's looking for Xbox recommendations.
Hmm.
As for the transition, I know I got caught by this for Uncharted 3 in that opening bar fight scene. I think I got punched in the face like 2 to 3 times before I realized I was actually in control of what's his face? Uncharted guy. Why can't I think of his name? I don't
know. Nathan Drake.
Yeah, Drake.
Yeah, Uncharted does that a lot, actually. And I'm trying to think. I feel like there are some good examples out there.
I guess the first one that really blew my mind like that would have been Mario 64, where it's the same graphics in that opening Lakitu cinematic, and then the camera just moves to be behind Mario, and you're in the game. The boss, the final boss in Metal Gear Solid 3, I think is another example that I remember being pretty awesome. Jay had an example when he was on the show last time of a not necessarily a transition, but a seamless technique in games in Tomb Raider where you go into cover automatically and just light flares on fire and stuff like that, automatic presentation things, or, you know, a horse rides itself in the new Zelda game will probably be the most revolutionary thing of all time. Any other ones? I can't think of any off the top of my head right now.
I mean, there's a lot of games like, you know, like the Resident Evil games where they did a lot of the QuickTime event stuff. I feel like that doesn't happen as much anymore, but for a while there were a lot of games where cinematic would be playing and you would just all of a sudden be like, oh shit, and then you'd have to pick up the controller because you weren't expecting it at all.
Oh, God of War is the best one. Like any like large like pulled back cameras, huge scale moments that could be cinemas that are essentially playable, like camera lock moments are amazing.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one. Xbox recommendations.
I got a quick list here. Gears of War, if you never played it, the first one, especially co-op, is amazing. Huck, we got to
get back
turn to that one day.
Yeah.
Rare Replay. Now, I would just say Viva Pinata, but they're both on there, so you might as well get that. It's cheaper, probably. Fable 2, and to some extent Fable 3. Halo Reach, I think, is the strongest Xbox 360 Halo campaign, which is backwards compatible now. Geometry Wars 2, Left 4 Dead 2 is back compat now. I really like Dead Rising 3, what I played. Forza Horizon 2 is a fun open world racing game, and underrated also would be Rise, I'd say. And especially when it goes on sale now.
And Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
And
the two Tomb Raiders. Yeah.
Sunset Overdrive as well, which I think is free right now.
It becomes free in 2 days, I think. But yes, that was my last one. Hold off for that. And anyone who has games with gold, get ready for that in 2 days. Free. That's huge.
Yep.
And if you like any sports games, get EA Access. Or EA games.
Yeah,
in general.
Good call. That's actually a huge thing. I should have said,
yeah,
good call.
That's one of the main factors for me, having an Xbox One.
$30 for a year, and there's like 20, 25 games you can play.
Actually, next week, FIFA 16 is released.
NHL 16 is
out.
Free in the vault now, right?
Yeah.
Check out Access. Cannot say enough about that.
Yeah.
Have you guys been finding that PlayStation Plus has been a little lackluster lately?
I don't even know any of the games for April.
I want to try that Dead Star. It caught my eye a while ago, and then it was announced. So I haven't played Broforce yet, but yeah, it's not too amazing, that's for sure.
It's been a while since I've actually felt like, oh, that's a game I actually would have wanted, and now I'm getting it for free. Like, it's usually just been crap that don't care about, but okay. Steven in Ireland says, hey, I'm sure you'll get plenty of emails about this. I'd like to hear your opinions on the rumors of the PS4K and the new model Xbox One. I guess we already covered that. We covered all this. Do you think the PS4K is just a play by Sony to get more UHD players out there? It's not like just because they own the format. Is that what he's saying? Or I guess so.
No, it's I guess Sony's first attempt, which makes sense, at a affordable home 4K player.
Yeah, I mean,
or a 4K streaming box.
Anything they can do to get people buying UHD is probably good for them. So.
I guess we didn't mention in when we first discussed it. The other thing, in terms of what games would work, they would work exactly the same, only they would obviously be able to be displayed in 4K, right? Like just they would work on a lower resolution or a 4K resolution, and nothing about the games would change except for that.
Yeah. Okay, what do we have here? Matt in Seattle says, "Dear Junkers, my basic question is, are any of you excited for No Man's Sky? But it opens up to a broader question of how exclusive factor into picking a side in the console wars. Up until this generation, I was a true blue Xbox guy, but since there's no backwards compatibility for the PS4 or Xbox One,
that's not true.
My collection of 360 games didn't matter. Both consoles are pretty much identical when it comes to apps, graphics, online, and anything else. For me, it came down to exclusives and which set of exclusives I could stomach not playing. With Mass Effect coming to PlayStation, the big three for Xbox were Halo, Gears, and Crackdown. Halo is the big one for me, but after the disaster that the Master Chief Collection turned out to be and the lackluster Halo 5, I had to begrudgingly let that one go, so I decided to pick up a PS4, which has Uncharted, Infamous, and Ratchet & Clank, plus a much better job of bringing out new exclusives like No Man's Sky and Horizon Zero Dawn."
That's debatable.
"Where do you stand? How much does a console's exclusive titles factor into your allegiance? Thanks, Matt."
It factors a lot. I would say there are more potential exclusive titles for PS4 that intrigue me, but currently way more exclusive titles for Xbox that aren't HD remakes. Pardon me. We got to get that in there. But I do think Infamous, the new Infamous, was amazing. So they both have, why I buy them all is they always have games that are exclusive that you can only play there. But that is the primary thing for me. I look at what systems, not just games, but are providing exclusive experiences. And I think I haven't played much online PS4, but I still love Xbox's online friends and matchmaking systems. So that's the kind of stuff that currently has me favoring Xbox One. But Uncharted and maybe a 4K announcement could shift the tide for me.
But, I mean, like, he's kind of asking, like, if you could only buy one console, which would you buy? Like, we all...
I'm probably a PS4 guy because Uncharted.
Maybe, yeah, I mean, but... that to me, I don't really think exclusives are as big a deal as they were in the past. I feel like there's only a few left. Uncharted is the only one I really care about that much. But even stuff like Rise of the Tomb Raider, I mean, it's a timed exclusive. So, you know, eventually it's going to be out on PS4. I mean, there are some indie things that I feel like Sony's doing a little more in that area. But,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think you can really go wrong with either one. They're both really good systems with good games. So,
but the question is, are we heading for a one console future?
I don't know. I was thinking the other day, and I did some online research, and I don't think it's possible, but why couldn't Microsoft buy Sony? Like, they are worth way more.
Windows 10 is the one console future.
Yeah.
Or something like I could, like 10 years from now, I could see something like that happening. Sony's been struggling huge. So with their TVs and technology has kind of taken a dump. So I don't know the rules. I'm sure there's business reasons and law. I just think it's an interesting hypothetical the way we talk about Apple and Nintendo merging, which is less likely based on company worth, I think. But I don't know. I think it would be awesome. It would be the best if those two merged somehow.
As for No Man's Sky, I think we're all optimistic for it.
Yeah, especially when I found out it comes out on my birthday. Now I'm like, that's all it takes. Fucking, let's do this.
It's just one of those games that it's like, it sounds so cool, but like, will it actually deliver on all the things that it either promises or that you think it's promising? I don't know.
I will say this, with the PlayStation, the one thing that bothers me is with the marketing and E3 stuff, a lot of stuff that I think people think are exclusives aren't. I'm not saying this writer or listener is saying that because they seem to be pretty clear, but I know a lot of people, casual fans, thought Battlefront, based on the marketing campaigns, was PS4 exclusive or just things like that, and people thinking that Final Fantasy VII Remake is exclusive, which I don't think it is. And just Sony's really good at associating themselves with games people love, or whether they're well known or not so well known, or like gaming community games. So that's kind of half of the battle, and Sony has done a very good job of that. So if you care about Call of Duty, or you would, I would buy a PS4. If that was the game you played all the time, you'd have to get it on PS4 to get all the DLC early.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. My, to me, it's just like Microsoft has been behind in this generation, but they just seem to have like unlimited money. Like they've pretty much been losing money ever since they've been in the video game industry, it seems like, and they just keep going.
I feel like that being behind is mostly perception, though. Financially, for sure, they sell way less consoles, but in terms of quality of service and games and exclusives, I think they're pretty comparable, and I would give a slight edge to Microsoft.
I agree. Like, they're very comparable at this point, but I just think in terms of sales, Microsoft has been playing catch up, but they just keep cutting prices and, like, you know, buying major timed exclusives and throwing money around. So,
one thing I would say is, in terms of controllers, I know you have to buy a play and charge kit for Xbox, but if you do that, the battery life on the controllers is way longer on Xbox, even though I find the PS4 controller slightly more comfortable.
Yeah. Okay. Stanislav says, "Hey guys, I'm not sure if you've talked about the Souls series on this podcast. Last year I started with Demon's Souls, now I'm going through Dark Souls 2. These games are definitely very hard to get into, but once you're in for good. Great visual design across the board, subtle storytelling through environments and even item descriptions, great responsive controls, and unforgiving difficulty. So I wonder, what's your story with this series, if there is any? Keep up the good work."
I've just played...
Tried to play...
Oh, go ahead, Frank.
No, you go.
All right, I've just played Dark Souls 1. I got... I think Demon's Souls was free on PS3, so I have it. But I've only ever played Dark Souls and really liked it, and never really felt the urge to go to Dark Souls 2 or 3 since I hadn't beaten Dark Souls 1. But yeah, it grabs you, but it's also very challenging. So it also spit me back out before I finished it.
I actually tried to start playing Dark Souls 1 again 2 weeks ago, I think. And I love the opening areas now that I've played them so many times and I don't get destroyed, but it's those points where you get destroyed. They're so, to me, so deflating that I just don't have the time to redo the same areas over and over again to get to that point. And I think it looks great. I like the basic idea, but every time it gets a little further, it almost sinks its claws in. It just hasn't done it yet.
Yeah, there's no story between me and this game franchise. I will probably never play one, but I mean, I'm a little curious. It's the kind of thing where if somebody was playing it, I might be curious to watch them play it, but I don't think I would subject myself to this. But Dark Souls 3 just came out, right?
Yeah, yesterday, I guess.
Are either of you guys planning on picking it up or no?
Not right now.
No, me either.
All right, we got one from Chandon, who says, "Greetings, Sean, Frank, and Huck. With the PR disaster of the Coleco Chameleon unfolding online, I was interested to hear some game developers' thoughts on the matter. There's been a lot of talk, justified mudslinging, and backlash against the project from gamers, media types, and journalists, but little from actual developers and designers. From day one, this seemed like an answer to a problem no one asked for, considering the failure of the Ouya as a modern digital alternative and the fact that we already have moderately decent retro emulation consoles available like Retro Freak and Retron 5. How did this ever get off the ground? Why would developers ever consider creating new cartridge-based games for the modern age? Sadly, there seems to be some backpedaling from Mike Kennedy as he continues to plead ignorance and point fingers elsewhere, not to mention the ironic symbolism of using an Atari Jaguar shell for your system. Regards, and as always, thank you for the podcast, Chandon." Do you guys know about this at all?
I watched a video one time and obviously noticed the Atari Jaguar shells that were probably left over that they're using. But other than that, it hasn't really been on my radar.
Yeah, I mean, I just read up about it after receiving this email. I had heard about it back when it was called, like, the Retro VGS or whatever. But I totally did not know about Coleco attaching their name to it or any of that stuff. Like, I guess there was a Kickstarter, or not a Kickstarter, Indiegogo, I think, and it failed. And then somehow they got Coleco involved, and they showed this thing running, but, like, it was literally just a Super Nintendo hardware inside a Jaguar shell. And they were passing this off as, like, a prototype of this retro console they were making. And people started to realize, like, this is nothing. Like, you haven't built anything. And then eventually Coleco looked into it, and they were like, yeah, if you can't prove to us that you actually have something, we're out. And they are now out. So kind of tells you what's going on there. I have no idea how somebody thought they could get away with that. Like, I mean,
yeah.
Unless they just thought we're going to set up like a Kickstarter and take the money and run. Like, at some point, people are going to realize this isn't a legit thing, right?
Have they ever, like, looked online about the emulation, like, legalities of emulation in general? I mean, like, digital emulation?
That's a whole other thing, yeah.
That's probably even less binding than physical stuff, because, I don't know, it seems silly.
Yeah. Very strange. Anyway, so here's some older emails. Did you guys remember if we actually did any of these? I don't think we did, but we got one from Jared, who says, what does the crew think about esports, particularly League and Super Smash Brothers? Opinions on the emerging industry and any players in particular? Also, has anyone watched the Smash Brothers doc series, and if so, what did you think?
Like most of the games here, don't follow esports, probably in the minority. Guess I'm just a little too old school for that.
Yeah, I don't follow anything. I have not watched that doc series, though it would probably be interesting. But
there is a documentary that just got added on Netflix this month. I can't remember what it's called, but it's directed by the guy who did like Wordplay and I don't know if he's the same guy who did Spellbound, maybe. No, I don't think it's... I don't remember, but let me see if I can just look it up real quick. I mean, I'd be curious to watch something that's like a legit documentary on this stuff, but like, I don't know. By legit, I guess I mean like a little bit more polished and professional, not just like a fan-made thing. But, I mean, I'm interested in just the concept overall and the fact that people actually make a living off of this stuff. But I guess none of the games I really like are games that are esports games. So, I mean, something like Rocket League, maybe. I could see myself maybe watching that. That'd be kind of fun. The documentary is called All Work, All Play. And the director is Patrick Creedon. So, I don't know. Might check that out. I think it's on Netflix in the U.S. and Canada. But, yeah. I think we did talk about esports a little bit, I think, last time DeRoche was on. Did we not?
Probably because he was talking StarCraft.
He went to the finals, right. I think.
And our good buddy Chin, I know he's been to some of the Street Fighter tournaments that have been just, like, in the Toronto area and stuff. So he's kind of into that stuff, but
I know some people that go to Evo and are pretty heavy into the Street Fighter stuff.
Yeah. What else do we have here? Steven in Dublin, question about Destiny. I mean, this was, again, this question was from a while back, I think just when Taken King was about to come out. He's basically saying that we didn't give it a fair shake. Would we give it a go now? And I think since then I've played it. I don't know if... Did I talk about it? I think I did the last show a bit. And I would definitely like to get into it more. It's just, I don't see myself necessarily having the time to devote to it. And if I have to choose between a game like this, which is all encompassing and it's the only game I'm going to play for months, I would probably not do that. And I'd rather play a little bit of some other games instead. But you said you did play it. And
yeah, I played a little bit. I liked it. Same deal, though. Not enough time. And
yeah, but so. I think it does seem like a game that has taken a while to sort of find itself. And clearly, from what I've read, people are saying the story in Taken King is way better than the story in the actual early Destiny stuff. So I don't know. Again, that's something like I wish I could just kind of jump to that stuff, but I don't know if I would necessarily want to just jump like to whatever level you need, or I don't know. Did you say it costs money or something, Frank?
What, Taken King?
Well, to jump to the right level to be able to immediately play.
No, no, you have to buy the Taken King package to right. get that ability.
Okay.
So if you buy the Taken King version, it comes with the ability to jump right into that content via leveling up, I guess.
Right. Question from Nathan. Now that you've been part of the development of a game that's been released, have you been watching people play it on Twitch? I assume that's more directed to you, Huck City.
No, maybe.
Thoughts on Twitch in general? I generally don't get time to play many games, but I like to watch Twitch in the background when I'm doing other things. See games I'm never going to play.
I watched some Twitch players play Citizens when it first came out, but since then I don't really follow it at all. But when it first comes out, it's kind of like a, you know, first time watching people play it, so it's exciting. I like Twitch. I usually watch Twitch streams of games that are either new that I'm not so sure about, or more niche games that I'm, you know, are kind of getting the rumblings that I don't really know anything about. I'll try to hunt those down, but I don't regularly go to Twitch to watch, you know, particular people or particular esports or anything like that.
Yeah, I guess my old man is coming through again, and just haven't really consistently watched anything on Twitch or had the desire to.
Again, I am also an old man, and everybody at my work watches Twitch all day, apparently, because we've been getting emails about the bandwidth just being out of control, because everybody's watching Twitch, and I have never watched it, so I am.
I just would always rather be playing a game than watching someone else play.
No, it feels like something that's like maybe I should get into this, because it's like, you know, I just never have time to at least finish games. Maybe I should go back and just watch the end of all these games that I never finished.
Something similar to Twitch, but I watch YouTube Let's Plays sometimes for games I just don't have the time to play or own or don't right. want to buy, but would like to see sort of like what's up with them. So I'll throw on those in the background sometimes, and just to watch, see what game mechanics on. Also for research, just kind of to see what the game mechanics are while working at the same time, and you don't have to really do it yourself. I use that sort of stuff for me.
Okay, last but not least, we have Pete in the UK. He says, hello, I'm a big fan of Game Junk and all the other junks, but I don't play computer games due to never having the money to spend on them. But this will all change in the next few months, and I plan to buy my first console since the Sega Mega Drive. I'm interested in immersive exploratory games or sandbox games like Red Dead Redemption, although I've never played one. So what is your advice, the best console and the best 5 immersive games where you can explore the world? All the best, Pete. So I don't know if Pete's made his purchase yet, but again, getting back to the...
Is there an exclusive game that's immersive or exploratory? I'm trying to think of one.
Uncharted.
I don't know. It's like story based, like a sandbox game that's exclusive. Maybe Crackdown.
What about like Journey? kind of immersive.
No.
Yeah, it sounds like he wants like big,
like The Witcher type thing or Red Dead.
Last of Us?
Grand Theft that? Auto. No? Yeah. No.
Yeah, I don't know. That is a good question. Like, what about, is Final Fantasy on both platforms?
Yeah.
I think so.
What about, why can't
like I Assassin's say? Creed would be, but that's on everything, of course. Like, open world, exploratory.
Yeah.
Maybe the Witness.
Maybe.
Is that just PS4 and PC?
Currently, yeah. I don't know. When or if it's coming to Xbox One.
Obviously, the GTA games.
Yeah, would be... Witcher, Metal Gear, Last of Us.
Yeah. Skyrim.
Phantom.
Fallout. If you like that sort of thing.
I mean, this is the thing. Like, you're listing off... We're listing off all these games. You could have one of these games and spend a year on it, probably. Like,
yeah.
I would say, if I was going to spend a lot of time on a game like that, Witcher 3... Phantom Pain, and I think Black Flag is really good. Out of all the Assassin's Creed games, I'd recommend Black Flag the most. And one other one,
Fallout, Skyrim.
I'm gonna go a little outsider pick. I'm gonna say Bully for a Rockstar one. Another Rockstar one.
Hmm. Not really open world, but I agree that game's excellent.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends if you're into fantasy, if you're into sci-fi, you know, whatever.
Maybe Saints Row.
Yeah, Saints Row. I would say, actually, one that I would like to play would be Just Cause 3. But, you know, I think we've given you some stuff to go on there. And yeah, as far as which console to get, I really don't.
It's probably, if you're into sports, go Xbox One. Then you can get the EA access. Although, is that only North America?
I don't know.
Good question. Not sure. Okay, I think that wraps up the junk mail. So thanks everyone for sending in your questions and comments. And that's bringing us to the end of another epic edition of Game Junk. Let's briefly talk upcoming releases. Let me see. Where are we here? So, Ratchet and Clank is now out, right, Frank? Dark Souls 3.
Yep.
Star Fox Zero comes out April 22nd. Severed April 26th. I guess we should say for the next episode, we're hoping to get our buddy Graham back. Maybe do a bit of an in-depth interview about the making of Severed. And definitely hoping we'll have a chance to play it and give our thoughts on it. And also Uncharted 4 is May 10th, so hopefully that will be also something we'll have had a chance to play. Doom is May 13th, Overwatch May 24th, Mirror's Edge Catalyst May 24th, TMNT Mutants in Manhattan May 24th. That's a big day.
How are you gonna get sunk into what was it? What Catalyst. Are you gonna do for Mirror's Edge?
Catalyst.
Mirror's Edge is definitely taking a back seat to TMNT. I'll tell you that right now. No Man's Sky, June 21st, Lego Star Wars, The Force Awakens, June 28th, Deus Ex Mankind Divided, August 23rd. That's all I had written down. I don't know if there's anything else between now and the summer you guys are aware of.
No idea.
Nope.
Kind of feels like there's not a whole lot of stuff coming out right now. Like it's been slow. Would you guys not agree?
Yeah, seems like it. A little bit of a downtime. Yep. There's a lot to play, but a lot of it's carryover. Yeah. Like The Witcher is massive.
Right.
I'll probably be playing that for years.
But like even for the holidays last year there at the end of the year was kind of less than it usually is. And then, yeah, like the first few months of this year has just been very little. So,
I got a quick announcement, actually, I just thought of. If anyone's in the Toronto area and is bored the last week of April, last weekend of April, I think it's Saturday, I'm doing a talk at the EGLX conference. I think it's Enthusiast Gamer Life Expo or something like that. Hmm. They're having like a dev talk day. So if you want to come watch gamers and other esports type stuff, there's a lot there. But they're also doing like a dev talk day. I don't know the specifics of when my talk is, but it'll be dev-like and kind of tactical about porting your game to multiple platforms. So if that's something that interests you, come by. And then there's a drink bar night kind of thing. I think tickets are $10 out in Etobicoke at the Westin something hotel. You can look it up probably. If you look up EGLX, I imagine the details are probably around somewhere.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
so you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/GameJunk, Twitter, at GameJunk Podcast, and we do post news from time to time. And you can follow us all individually at Dirty Frank with three R's and Dirty, at My Angry Commute. You gotta get the Twitter, the new Twitter handle for the new company, no?
Yeah, I got it already.
Oh, you don't want to get it out?
No, I'm not ready to talk about that quite yet.
So,
spoiler alert. Jeez.
Oh, sorry. you can follow me at Film Junk. And anything else? No?
Nope.
All right. Well, until next time, thanks for listening.
I've noticed this becoming really popular recently. Neil deGrasse Tyson showing up in everything. Give us a break, will ya, fella?